This is The Other Side of Midnight with Frank Morano.
They're running a strange program, y'all.
Talk Radio 77 WABC. Now, here's Frank Morano.
Happy Friday, TGIF. Welcome to the best day of the week. And according to Dominic Carter, I would never say this, but according to Dominic Carter, welcome to the best radio show in New York City. Certainly the ratings indicate it's the best one in its time slot. We're humbled by your support. I'm just hoping when the October ratings come out that we'll still be number one for October. But the bottom line is the weekend is here. It's Friday. Great Veterans Day programming we had all day yesterday. I was glued to my radio. I'm sure many of you were as well. We also had a lot of great video footage over at WABCRadio.tv. Now, it is time for
The Other Side of Midnight proudly presents Ask Frank.
Ask Frank Anything.
Ask Frank Anything.
Ask Frank Anything.
Ask Frank Anything.
That's right. It is your time to ask questions about any subject from A to Z, and I will do my best to answer them. Now, we're trying to get a diverse array of subjects. If all of you call about professional wrestling, that could be pretty boring for people that aren't into professional wrestling. If all of you call with questions about the 2024 presidential race, that can be pretty boring for people that want to hear about other things. So try to be creative. Think about whatever you want. Questions on any subject, film, television, books, business, radio. There's a lot of exciting stuff happening in the world of radio now. Cocktails. You want advice about a subject, you can ask it. You want to know about my personal history. You want to know about who my third great teacher was. You're welcome to. Pro wrestling, gambling, Atlantic City, local politics, restaurants, New York in general, the criminal justice system, aliens, the mob, any hypothetical questions, my personal preferences on anything, relationships, baseball, or the culture at large, you name it, you can ask it. 800-848-9222. Now is the time to ask me anything. 1-800-848-WABC. Let me say hello to John in the Bronx. Hello, John.
Yeah, hey there, Frank. I don't know if you agree with this. It could be good news. If Mayor-elect Eric Adams succeeds in bringing New York City back, you think he just might cross the bridge and live here himself?
Well, I mean, you're being kind of flippant, but yes, I do think that you're going to see quite a bit of seeing quite a bit of Eric Adams in New York City now, because he's going to be spending most of his time residing in Gracie Mansion. So, yes. Neil in Staten Island, what is your question?
Yes, Frank. My son was listening to your podcast, and he heard you say when you received those Pez dispensers from me that you had them at one time and you regifted them. And then he said to me, you know, Dad, what's he going to do with the ass man plate? Is he going to regift that also?
Never, never. That is one of a kind. I will keep that always. It has a valued place in my office.
Who would you regift it to if you did?
I don't know. Maybe I would give it to one of my siblings because they're big Seinfeld fans as well. Or I have an old friend. We used to be very close, but I haven't seen him in many years. My old friend Vic Christopher was quite a ladies' man back in the day. Maybe I would give it to him. Maybe I'd give it to the real Kramer, Kenny Kramer, but he actually has a license plate that says Ass Man already. So I think I would probably give it to one of my siblings.
Okay, Frank. Terrific. Have a great weekend, buddy.
Thank you very much. Answering your questions on any subject, 1-800-848-WABC. That's 1-800-848-9222. Let me say hello to Billy in Rockland County. Hello, Billy.
Hello, Frank. How are you?
I'm well. Thanks.
Good. Good luck with your newborn.
Thank you. Right. I appreciate it.
Now, if you could remove one broadcaster from the air, who would it be?
TV or radio or any format?
Yeah, anything.
Well,
any
look,
format.
I don't like to remove people because I recognize the fact that while I may not like people and I may not think they add anything, that there's somebody there that likes them. But if I could remove one person from the airwaves, who would it be? Let me think. TV or radio? It's a good question. I might remove. I find very little value to someone like Chris Cuomo, to be honest. But is he the worst? I don't want to say Chris Cuomo. It could be Don Lemon. It might be, I'm going to go with Don Lemon. I'll say him.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right.
Good question, though, Billy. Thank you. 800-848-WABC. That's 1-800-848-9222. Answering your questions on any subject. Eddie is in New Jersey. Hello, Eddie. Eddie's gone. 1-800-848-9222. Let me say hello to Bill in Huntington. Now, Bill, what's your question?
How are you doing?
Oh, that's an easy question. I'm doing fine.
Okay, I have another question.
Oh, all right. Go right ahead.
All right. When I went to vote in Suffolk County, there was a family court judge. She was in the Republican, the Democratic, and the Conservative Party. How is that possible?
Excellent question. And this is something that is uniquely New York. And it's a little more prevalent in judicial races, but it does happen in legislative races as well. In city council races this year, for instance, both Bob Holden of Queens and Kalman Yeager of Brooklyn ran on both the Democrat and Republican lines. How is that possible? New York is one of the few states in the country that still allows what's called fusion, where you have multiple parties that are able to endorse the same candidate. New York is the only state where it's routinely done. Now, since 1947, there's been a law in place called the Wilson-Pakula Law, and that requires the parties to give a special authorization to a candidate to appear on that line. So, if you're a registered Republican, let's say, and you want to run as a Democrat as well as a Republican, you'd need special permission from the Democrats. Now, the one exception to that is judicial races. You don't need a Wilson-Pakula in a judicial race. So because you don't need any special permission, or they call it an authorization or Wilson-Pakula, because you don't need a Wilson-Pakula in a judicial race, you can just circulate petitions. So that judge, I don't know the circumstances of their election, but what they could have done, and this is pretty routine actually, is gotten some friends of theirs who are notaries to carry petitions for them on the Republican line, the Democratic line, and the conservative line. And then they could have won all three primaries if there were primaries. It's not unusual for judges to try to run on multiple party lines. But that judge or a judicial candidate, I'm assuming he got elected, so it's a judge. That judge, that is a person that's only a member of one party, even though he or she is appearing on the line of multiple parties. It makes sense at all?
Hello?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Yeah, but it's messed up.
Well, why is it messed up?
She might be a woke terrorist like this.
The thing, in Nassau. Well, the thing. The new DA is woke or the old DA is woke?
The one that tried to run for it in Nassau.
Right. Okay. Well, yeah. Thank you, Bill. The thing with judicial candidates, you wouldn't know if they were a woke terrorist, as you put it, because judicial candidates in New York State are actually, this is pretty universal around the country, but in New York, this is in the law. You're not allowed to speak about issues. If you're walking down the street and you ask a judicial candidate, if a judicial candidate's running for office, or even if they're not, if they're elected or whatever the case may be, if you ask a judge or a judicial candidate, hey, Judge so-and-so, what's your position on abortion? He can't tell you. They're not allowed to talk about issues while they campaign. The only thing judicial candidates can talk about are their own qualifications and administration of the court. So you can't ask a judicial candidate, hey, Are you for higher taxes or lower taxes? You think flag burning should be legal? You know, do you think the death penalty should be legal? You can't ask any of those candidates, and a judicial candidate, well, you can ask, but a judicial candidate can't answer any of those questions. So the fact that they're on multiple party lines, you know more or less about their positions than you would if they were just on one party line. 800-848-9222. That's 1-800-848-WABC. Let me say hello to Jeremiah in the Bronx. Hello, Jeremiah.
Hey, how you doing, Frank?
Good, thanks.
If you had a rock and roll anthem, what would your rock and roll anthem be? Would be? Mine's would be either, it's a toss-up between Imagine from John Lennon or Freebird from Lynyrd Skynyrd. What would yours be if you had a rock and roll anthem?
Well, I mean, I do have a rock anthem at the top of every hour. It's Metallica, Enter Sandman.
That's your rock and roll anthem.
100%, 100%. Listen to this. Listen, Metallica. This is this anthem, Jeremiah. When I hear this now, when I'm not on the radio, I run to the nearest microphone and start getting ready to do a show. It's so like. This gets me pumped up. There are days when I've done this show on no sleep, and just hearing this music in the background, it fills me with such an energy. I'm like, it's like I become electroshocked into the Frankenstein monster, or Frankenstein's monster, technically.
Really? Yeah. Jekyll and Hyde?
No, well, maybe. So you like Imagine, John Lennon. I have nothing against it. It's a great song.
Or Lynyrd Skynyrd. Yeah, they have meaning.
So if we're talking... I like Lynyrd Skynyrd too, Jeremiah. Don't get me wrong. Jeremiah, thanks for the call. 800-848-9222. 1-800-848-WABC. Let me say hello to... let's see. We'll go to Joe in Manhattan. Hello, Joe.
Hi. Listen, Frank. This is precisely why. Now, I've been listening to talk radio for ages, you know, 30 years at least. Now, mostly WABC, 90%. Now, the reason why I believe, personally, it's my business, you know, that you are absolutely, absolutely unique as a talk radio show host, you know, because of this particular segment.
Oh, well, thank you.
And also the rapid fire segment, you know, which is the 15 seconds to fame.
Right, exactly.
I mean, nobody can beat you.
Thank you.
As long as you have those intact, you know, nobody can beat you. Forget about the rest. Even if you did nothing, you slept on the show. Now, here's the question I have. Now, Italian and Spanish, you know, passively speaking, they're 50% alike. So if you know one pretty decently and grammar, etc., you already know 50% of the other automatically without even learning it.
Right.
You know, 50% of
sure.
The, okay. Now, most Italians I've known, you know, including the restaurateur nearby, you know, half a block away, he speaks half Spanish, half Italian with the Mexican workers, their waiters, etc., and they have decent communication, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So I'm just curious. You tend to speak solely English. You never, like Bob Grant, you don't use any on the side, you know, like Italian, etc., nothing like that. You're
well,
a pure English speaker.
Well, yeah,
so I'm just curious.
I only have one primary language. And, you know, my grandfather, who I was very close to, his first language was Italy. And he would watch a lot of Italian television, but I never really picked it up from him. I did study it a bit in school, but I didn't know that well because my mother never really learned it because he was pretty determined that his children speak English, the country that he chose to come to and raise his kids in. So I wish he did speak it more, and I wish I did have a firmer grasp of Italian. But no, I speak strictly. I mean, I know an Italian word here and there, but yeah, I speak strictly English, for better or worse.
Okay. One more question quickly. Rachel and you, congratulations, right?
Thank you.
For the forthcoming child. And, of course, you don't know the gender and you don't want to know at all, although you misheard or overheard somebody mention she, you know, one of the nurses.
Right, exactly.
Right, a few days ago. Now, what is the biggest question you have right now, or Rachel and you have, vis-a-vis the child that is going to be born, I think, 6th of December?
Well, yeah, that's her due date. Yeah. The biggest question I have, that's a good question. I don't know. I guess it would probably be about gender, but I'm not spending a lot of time worrying about it, honestly. So I am, I'm pretty comfortable with whatever happens. I'm not sure what the biggest question I would ask is. I mean, obviously you always wonder about certain things. Will the child, be an easy sleeper? Will he be colicky? So you always wonder about certain things, but I don't think I have many questions myself about parenting style. I mean, maybe that's naive on my part, and but no, I don't really have many questions at this point.
Okay.
Thank you. Right, I guess most of my questions, honestly, Joe, involve time management. You know, once you have this baby, because I feel like I don't have a minute already as it is now. And so I'm really wondering about how caring for another human being will alter my management of my day, which is already filled to the brim. So that's kind of, if I had to pick a question, it would be about that.
Okay. Thank you very much. Listen, one more question I'm saving for next week.
All right. I'll stay tuned, Joe. Thank you. 800-848-9222, answering your questions on any subject. That's 1-800-848-WABC. David is in upstate New York. Hello, David.
Hi, how are you?
I'm well, thanks.
Okay, first question for the night. We'll make it to two short questions. First question, Mr. Roger Stone announced that he plans on running for governor if Mr. DeSantis doesn't do certain things. So I just want to know, in short, what do you think of Mr. Stone?
Well, Roger's a good friend of mine. In fact, he called me yesterday while I was asleep, and I didn't have a chance to call him back. I meant to call him on the way in. I don't think he's going to run against Ron DeSantis.
Right, and I don't think so either. I want to know what you think of the person.
I actually, I've said this before, and I've said this to Roger. Roger has tried to cultivate this reputation as a bad guy, and I think he's done that because once he got caught up in that sex scandal in 96, he had no real future in mainstream American politics. Roger is actually a great guy. I mean, the lengths that he goes to help his friends and family members is amazing. The love that he has for dogs is amazing. I remember one time his dog Pee-wee was missing. This guy was obsessed. He put aside all his paying clients and did nothing but arrange for the search of this dog. He called in every possible favor to recover this dog. And I actually think, in spite of the persona that Roger has created for himself on radio, TV, and in books, I think Roger's a great guy. And he's actually a very smart guy and a very well-rounded guy. And, you know, again, I think he's so tied himself to the Trump brand these days that I have private conversations with Roger about what he thinks about certain issues. I think Roger's true politics would actually surprise a lot of people. He's much more liberal and libertarian than I think most people believe.
I believe that he's a libertarian. Right. Okay, so that's the first question. I got that. One more short question. You said earlier that if you get in New York, there's a law. I think you called it the Wilson something.
Wilson Pakula, yeah.
Right, that if the Republicans and the Democrats sign off, that one person can run for a government office on both parties. What do you think about running for Senate? And we're going to get both parties to sign for you.
Well, running for U.S. Senate against Chuck Schumer?
Yeah.
You know, it's funny. I'm doing what I really love right now. However, I think Curtis made a very credible showing here in New York City. I'd love to see Curtis run for U.S. Senate next year. Maybe we'll ask him about it when he jumps on board at 3:30. Curtis Sliwa, by the way, yes, will be my guest at 3:30. We're going to tell you about what he's doing on radio next. We'll talk about his political future and a bunch of other things. And by the way, there's a lot of debate about the possible legalization of prostitution in New York. We've covered it on this show. So we're going to be joined next hour by a sex worker named Liara Rue, who is really interested in legalizing prostitution in New York. We'll find out why. Meantime, I have a big believer in Life Change Tea. I've been telling you about it for a long time. Life Change Tea over at GetTheTea.com, that's the website, is a great product. It's a gentle daily cleanse that tastes great and works to get things moving. And if your digestive system is out of whack at all, if you're feeling stopped up and bloated, that's never a good thing. But Life Change Tea is an all-natural way to help that. No GMOs, no preservatives, no chemicals, and it is only available by going to the website GetTheTea.com. That's GetTheTea.com. You can use the promo code Frank for free shipping. Promo code Frank. It's time to feel relief. While you're there, check out all their other great products designed for your optimal health. Don't miss out. Life Change Tea at GetTheTea.com. You got to make sure you use that promo code Frank. Not only will you get the free shipping, but the good folks over at GetTheTea.com will know you heard about it on this show. Life Change Tea at GetTheTea.com. It is the tea that makes you go.
You're hearing things on 77 WABC.
This is The Other Side of Midnight with Frank Morano, 77 WABC.
Stones here on the other side of midnight. They're still touring. My friend Arthur Idala just saw them in Las Vegas. Says they're still putting on a great show. Good for them. Although they're not performing Brown Sugar anymore, right? 800-848-9222. Let me say hello to Nate in Union, New Jersey. Hello, Nate.
Hey, how you doing?
I'm well, thanks.
Two small questions. What is the best question you ever got? And what's the question you wish people would ask?
Well, what was your second question?
What's the question you wish someone would ask?
Oh, huh. See, that's a great question. So the best question that I've ever gotten, you know, the reason we do this on the radio is because we hope that it creates interesting and entertaining and compelling radio. So a lot of times I don't know if a question is going to be good when I begin to attempt to answer it. So I would have to say, based on my own criteria of what makes a question good, that it elicits good, good testimony. I think the best question that I've gotten was maybe about 3 or 4 weeks ago, maybe a month or so ago, when someone asked about to describe the circumstances of Curtis Sliwa's shooting. And I didn't really think twice about answering the question honestly and to the best of my knowledge and recollection. But the feedback that I got from people who had never heard that whole story was incredible. They thought it was very compelling. So I think that would probably be the best question that I've ever gotten. In terms of a question that I wish someone would ask, that is a good one. I don't have an answer for that one on that one, Nate. I'll work on coming up with an answer to that. I'm going to give that some thought over the weekend.
Whatever it is, I'll ask you it next week.
I will report back to you, Nate. Thank you. 800-848-WABC, answering your questions on any subject. Russell is in White Plains. Hello, Russell.
Hey, Frank. I was just wondering what your thoughts were on Project Veritas being raided by the FBI.
Yeah, you know, Paul or Irishman, whatever name you're going by this week, you're going to have to pay Russell a royalty for using his name. I explained my whole thoughts on this yesterday, which is it looks to me like a clear violation of the law. I think that that if the Department of Justice doesn't show some evidence that shows a good faith basis for raiding James O'Keefe's apartment and his office, then to me it looks like the DOJ is engaging in some sort of political prosecution. And it's not only me who's saying this. A lot of other people that believe in things like press freedom, they have said the same thing, even though they're not necessarily big fans of James O'Keefe. I think it's outrageous. But, you know, we'll see what happens. We'll see what happens. If they have evidence that shows they stole the diary, then maybe. But if they use that as the auspices of getting a search warrant and then find evidence on something completely different, then I'm going to be very skeptical. Leo is in Manhattan. Hello, Leo.
Hi, Frank. I have a two-part question, both of them short. If you do, what kind of movies you cry? What kind of movies make you cry?
I'm trying to think. You know, I remember I've cried at a couple of movies, and you know, they vary widely. I still get broken up in Star Trek II every time I see the last scene with Spock and Captain Kirk. That still gets to me every single time. I'm beside myself. The first film I remember crying in, I don't remember the name of the film, but it had to do with an elephant who was poached and killed, and the baby elephant tried to wake up his mother. That was the first film I ever remember crying in.
The second part is, Frank, did you see Italian movie La Vita e Bella, Life is Beautiful, from concentration camp?
Absolutely, yes. Roberto Benigni, I loved it. Absolutely loved it.
Benigni, that's amazing movie. That made me cry.
Yeah, well, it's well done. I could see why. I haven't seen it since it was in theaters. I think I saw it multiple times in theaters. Actually, yeah, and it was on video right after that, so I saw it a few times after that. I think it's really well done, and if you're a fan of Roberto Benigni, I definitely recommend. It's not as heart-wrenching as Life is Beautiful, but there's a film called Johnny Stecchino, a wonderful Italian comedy with Roberto Benigni. It's a wonderful film. I got such a kick out of that film. I do recommend it. 800-848-9222 if you want to call in with a question. And there are two open lines now if you want to jump on board. 1-800-848-WABC. Let me say hello to Patrick in Sussex County, New Jersey. Hello, Patrick.
Good morning, Frank. How you doing? I wanted to get into distilling homemade alcohol spirits, and I was shocked to find out that I believe it's still a felony, and even owning the equipment to distill it is a felony. And in this day and age of decriminalizing and being allowed to grow marijuana at home, what do you think about it still being a felony?
Well, first of all, I didn't know. Are you technically allowed to legally grow marijuana at home?
I thought you can grow like less than 10 plants or less than 100 plants or something like that. But
yeah.
I don't think you can have any amount of distilled alcohol. You can make wine, beer, other types of alcohol,
yeah,
but I believe it's a felony to have any distilled alcohol.
Well, so I get – so the law says now that it's perfectly legal to own a still, and you can even use it as long as you're not making alcohol. So you can make essential oils without a permit or perfume or distilled water. I get the rationale behind it. They don't want people making moonshine that they drink and go blind. So I think you should be able to make your own alcohol and consume it. I don't think you should be able to make your own alcohol and sell it, because if you are making some sort of poison, I don't want that out there, you know, in the broader community. But if you want to drink your own poison, I think, you know, buyer beware.
Do you think it's an antiquated law then for it to still be illegal just to make it?
Yeah, I think it's a law that's probably in need of modification, Patrick. Yeah.
Do you think I'm in any danger of anyone ever enforcing that law, or you think that's just something that's in the books?
No, unless you are running, unless you're having, you know, these speakeasy style Great Gatsby parties where you're inviting 300 people over every weekend to drink your homemade moonshine, I think you're going to be okay.
Awesome. Right. Johnny Stecchino was a great movie, by the way.
Oh, you saw it too. Good. See?
All right.
800-848-WABC. That's 1-800-848-9222. We're going to take a break here? No, we got a little time. Okay. We have one open line if you want to jump on board. So somebody emailed me a question about this is a question asked me, and I've been trying to think of a good answer to this. Have you had any positive, traumatic, or fascinating experience in your pre-college life that you'd consider important enough to have altered the course of your life path? You know, that's very interesting. Very interesting. I think three probably come to mind, maybe two and a half. One, I think, is meeting so many different people. And I met a lot of interesting people before I was in college. And the one that most immediately comes to mind was Joe Franklin. But come to think of it, I'm not sure what I would be doing differently had I not met Joe Franklin. Might have been a different path along some methods, but I don't know. So, you know, the experience of doing a television show and having an opportunity to do a public access television show before I was in college, I think that was certainly very fertile training ground. That was a very fertile training ground for what I'm doing now. I can't imagine having the experience necessary to be on the radio and television regularly had I not started doing that when I was 15 or 16. So I think that's probably one. And then two other experiences that stand out were both experiences that I had as a radio listener. One was listening to Rush Limbaugh. One was listening to Howard Stern. A caller called in and asked Rush. Actually, there's two moments from Rush that really stand out. One was a caller had called in and asked about advice on working in talk radio. And Rush gave 10 or 11 very practical pieces of advice that I still that I wrote down at the time. And I still have those notes in my office and I still refer to. And I found every bit of that advice just great. And then another moment was one of the first times I ever heard Rush Limbaugh. It was in the late 80s, early 90s. And he used the phrase humpback Nova Scotia to talk about the G7 summit. And when he said humpback Nova Scotia, of course, the place is pronounced Nova Scotia, my mind was blown. I knew it was Nova Scotia. Rush knew it was Nova Scotia. But the fact that you could actually intentionally, for comedic effect, mispronounce the name of a community blew my mind. The fact that you can be in a medium where you're discussing serious subjects and inject that kind of mild satire, that was mind-blowing. And also, there was another point where, you know, when I was in fourth or fifth grade, I thought, you know, I was very into politics. So I thought maybe I would become a politician and run for elective office. But and the surest way to do that is to be an attorney. And that's still the surest way to do that, being an attorney and run for office. But I remember one time I was listening to Howard Stern, and I don't remember how old I was, but Howard Stern was talking to another kid. Maybe he was in fifth grade, sixth grade. And the kid told Howard that he wanted to be an attorney. And Howard says to this kid, in words or substance, this is, I'm paraphrasing here. I haven't heard it since it happened many, many years ago. He says, why would you want to be a lawyer? Lawyers don't do anything. They accomplish nothing. They produce nothing. They contribute nothing to society. And I thought, gee, well, you know, he's got a point there. Now, since college, I've developed much more of a fondness for the legal profession, particularly criminal defense attorneys. But a lot of what Howard said there really, really resonates with me. And I think the fact that every politician is a lawyer is one of the reasons why you need a lawyer to get through every aspect of society. They've made society so litigious that you can't even understand what bills are being passed if you don't have a law degree. 800-848-WABC, trying to answer your questions on any subject. 1-800-848-9222. Let me say hello to Christina in Yonkers. Hello, Christina.
Hi, Frank. Good morning. I just want to know why New York City's only country station, 94.7, was ripped off the air all of a sudden last month.
Yeah, well, that was at a time when Cumulus, which was the parent company of 94.7 and of this radio station at the time, was really in a bad spot. It was last year, right? It was last year?
No, last month.
Oh, it was last month. Oh, so I don't really know the circumstances. What's on there now?
It's the new station called The Block, and they're only playing like old school hip hop.
Yeah. I don't know what was behind the format change, because as far as I know, that's still a Cumulus owned station. But I'm not sure what was behind the format change. Honestly, it. OK, so here's what happened. They're not owned by Cumulus anymore. The, Cumulus was in a very tough spot financially. That's why they sold this station. It's why they sold WPLJ. It's why they sold 94.3. They sold it to a company called Odyssey. And they thought they could make – Odyssey thought they could make more money with, I guess, a hip-hop station than running WFMU as a WFME as a country station. But I don't have a better answer. I wish I did.
It's a shame because that station was not lacking listeners, that's for sure. A lot of upset people out there. We're still trying to find some answers to that.
Yeah, well,
thank you so much.
Yeah, thank you. It can be very frustrating when a radio station you listen to changes formats. I remember I used to love the talk station WEVD, 1050 AM. It was one of my favorite talk stations. I used to listen to it every day. I'd listen to Ed Koch on there. I'd listen to Sam Greenfield on there. I'd listen to Jay Diamond on there. I'd listen to Alan Colmes. Alan Colmes was on at night from 10 p.m. to 1. Bill Mazur in the morning. It might have been my favorite talk station, depending on the year. But at the time that Jay was on 1050 WEVD, it probably was my favorite talk station. I was listening to 1050 more than I was listening to WABC at that time, because what would happen is Jay is just such a talent. He would listen to what was going on this station, and then he would play clips of it on 1050 and make fun of everybody. I mean, it was hilarious. It was great. I mean, he was doing what Jon Stewart was doing, what MSNBC does, what Tucker Carlson does, years before anybody was doing that. So I was heartbroken when that station flipped formats and became a sports station, even though, you know, I have nothing against sports. But it's a very frustrating thing when a station you like flips formats. I'm sure a lot of you remember when WABC Music Radio flipped to talk. I'm sure a lot of you were upset at the time. 800-848-WABC. That's 1-800-848-9222. Let me say hello to Arnie in Brooklyn. Hello, Arnie.
Good morning. Frank, you have a lot of experience in New York politics, setting a party up for election. I'd like to know how election counting observers get their job, what their standing is legally, and what they're supposed to do if they get kicked out of the hall.
Well, when you say election counting observers, you're talking about people that work for the Board of Elections?
That's my question. Are these guys supposed to be partisan, or do they work for the Board of Elections?
Well, first of all, I don't know which, because there's a lot of people involved in the election process. I'm not sure which you're talking about.
I'm talking about the guy who's in the room while the counting is going on to make sure that it's a straight deal.
Well, so the way it works in New York is there is at every poll site a Democratic inspector and a Republican inspector. Quite unfair to the third parties. Every employee at the Board of Elections in New York is appointed by the Democratic and Republican parties themselves. It is the last vestige of direct political patronage in New York State. So the Democrats appoint all the Democratic inspectors, the Republicans appoint all the Republican inspectors.
Okay, so under that regime, it sounds like nobody should get kicked out because
right, no one does. Nobody that's an election inspector with the Board of Elections does get kicked out. Now, you also have individual campaigns can have poll watchers. That is not somebody that works for the Board of Elections or has any role in the count. That is somebody that can watch and observe on behalf of individual campaigns. Anybody can become a poll watcher. All you need is a signed certificate, either from a candidate running for office or from a chairman of a political party. And they give those out like Tic Tacs. The only reason that a poll watcher would be removed is if they're guilty of something called electioneering, where they have some sort of political paraphernalia within 50 feet of a poll site. But yeah, I think it's pretty rare in New York from what I've seen.
Okay, but those poll watchers are never admitted to the counting hall.
No, correct. The only exception would be if there's a protracted recount that the different campaigns might have an observer there for that. But no, it's the Board of Elections themselves, which consist of Democratic and Republican appointees, directly, one for one. You're not allowed to have a Republican alone with a ballot or a Democrat alone with a ballot in New York. 800-848-9222. I hope that was clear. Hey, we'll continue with your questions in just a minute. 1-800-848-9222. Straight ahead. Whitney Houston, or as we New Yorkers call her, Whitney Houston, singing I Will Always Love You. Originally a Dolly Parton song. Originally a Dolly Parton song. She, I think, if memory serves, I think she actually wrote that song for Elvis Presley, either as a duet or just for him. And he didn't end up recording it. But, and it's kind of a sad story, but sad in a loving way, that the day that Elvis and Priscilla Presley got divorced, Elvis sang that song to Priscilla after they signed their divorce papers, which is pretty sweet if you think about it. 800-848-WABC. Got two questions here via email. One, what will whatever happened with Melchizedek pooping in the bathtub, do you still have to place the litter box there? Excellent question. We actually stopped. We now keep that bathroom closed at all times, and he's been pretty good about going in the main litter box that the rest of them go in. So we're keeping the bathroom door closed at all times to deny him the option. There were a couple of incidents where he urinated on the mat outside of the litter box, and we construed that as a sign that he felt the litter box was a little too saturated. So we've been pretty good with that. And maybe it's happening once or twice a week that he's going outside of the litter box, on the mat in front of a litter box. Question two here via email. Do you keep a list of emergency topics in case a guest doesn't show up, like what happened the other day? Yes. Answer, yes. I have a lengthy list of talk topics that I keep ready at all times. Now, I don't like to go into this list too much, because when I talk about something, I like to be somewhat well-informed about it and do some research, maybe try and get some sound, maybe, do all sorts of things. So I keep this list of topics all the time, but the list of topics hasn't thoroughly ripened yet. And a lot of them are just kind of mediocre talk topics. If they were really good talk topics, then I would have done them already. So a lot of them are sort of mediocre talk topics. But yes, I do have a list of talk topics in case a guest doesn't show up. 800-848-WABC. That's 1-800-848-9222. Shelley is in Pensacola. Hello, Shelley.
Hello, Frank. I was wondering, I know your wife is Jewish and you're Italian, so I would think you're Catholic. I'm just wondering what, how your child will be raised, Catholic or Jewish.
Well, my wife is not a practicing Jew, and she's never been a practicing Jew. She's always been, she was raised evangelical Christian, and her mother's evangelical Christian. Now, technically, because her mother is ethnically Jewish, the Jewish faith will always consider her Jewish, no matter what my wife considers herself. So my wife is not a practicing Jew. She's evangelical Christian. I was raised Catholic. In recent years, I've started to identify more as Episcopalian, but I do still frequently go to Catholic Mass. To be quite honest, a lot of times it's because it's at a more convenient time than the Episcopal church in my neighborhood. So my wife is very devoutly Protestant. And, I thought the Episcopal Church would be a good middle ground for us because the Episcopal Church is almost like the Catholic Church, because she's moving a little more in my direction and I'm moving a little bit more in hers. So we've been going to a lot of different churches on Sundays. Let me finish what I was saying, Shelley. So she has been liking, out of all the churches that we've gone to, she's been liking the Lutheran service the most. However, when our child is baptized, I'd like to get him baptized in the Catholic Church, just so that the child, if he's a male, has the option one day of becoming Pope, because I think that's it's a shame to deny him that opportunity. And then we could still go to the Lutheran Church if she wants to go to the Lutheran Church. But the fact that she's not Italian, the fact that she's Irish and half Jewish, that will already makes it impossible for him to be in the mafia. Not that I want him to be in the mafia, but it's nice to have that career option available. So if we're already taking out made member of the mafia from his potential resume, I'd hate to eliminate Pope as well.
Absolutely.
Thank you, Shelley. 800-848-9222. Hey, let me tell you a little bit about inflation. These inflation numbers are absolutely out of control. Worst inflation we've seen in 31 years. Might be the worst inflation ever. Every newspaper you turn to has another story about the price of consumer goods, why it's happening, yada, yada, yada. We all know, bottom line is it's happening. So what can you do about it? Gold. Gold, silver, precious metals. Gold is a hedge against inflation. Precious metals offer a hedge against inflation and can protect your retirement. So if you have an existing retirement account, think about rolling it into a gold or a silver IRA. And if you do that, think about doing it with legacy precious metals. The last time the stock market collapsed and Americans lost their retirement, those that were invested in gold saw big gains and avoided the financial carnage. That's why gold really should be a part of every wise investor's portfolio. Legacy is the company that you can trust because they give you unbiased information based on your individual situation. Contact Legacy Precious Metals today. Write this number down, 866-932-0635. That's 866-932-0635. Or visit LegacyPMInvestments.com. That's LegacyPMInvestments.com. 800-848-WABC. Let me say hello to Jeannie in Queens. Hello, Jeannie.
Hello, Frank. How are you?
I'm well, thanks. Fine.
I have two questions, actually. What names are you considering for your baby, either male or female? And what do you think will happen with AOC? Is it possible she could ever get to be senator, vice president, God forbid, or House Speaker?
Well, I have a tough time seeing vice president or House Speaker. I have a tough time seeing vice president because, well, you never know. I mean, 20 years from now, if the demographic trends continue as they are and a Democrat decides that they need a Hispanic on the ticket in order to win, then maybe they would pick her. I think in the short term, I don't see that happening because she is so polarizing. I think she potentially puts a lot of purple states. I think she turns off a lot of purple voters in states like Georgia, Arizona, New Hampshire, mm-hmm. and the like. And then in terms of U.S. Senate, that I actually do think is a very realistic possibility. I think given the makeup of the Democratic populace in New York State, accepting Eric Adams, victory in the primary, and I think she could very easily primary Chuck Schumer or Kirsten Gillibrand, and I think she'd have an excellent chance of beating either of them.
That's too bad.
Thank you, Jeannie. 800-848-WABC, answering your questions on any subject. We'll try and get through as many of these as we can. Let me say hello to Roller in New Jersey. Hello, Roller.
All right, Frank, how you doing? I'm going to throw some AC questions at you in a crap game.
Got it.
What are the most hardways you ever seen thrown in a row by the same shooter? What crap system are you going to use for the New Year's or the dark side? Are you going to try to do the dice setting? Now, here's the real question. If you wrote a book about your Atlantic City escapades, what would you title it? And would you be honest, even including your drunken escapades? And one more big one. Do you know who Celeste Tate Harrington is in that, Atlantic City fame?
That name sounds familiar. Was that the first Miss America?
Negative. She was the lady that played the organ with her tongue.
Oh, no, then I didn't know who she was. No.
I'm going to send you something to Facebook. You should buy the rights to that and tell that movie. That lady was deformed, the mother.
Oh, really? Yeah. Send it over to me.
You should buy the rights to that and make that movie. That is an amazing story that should be told. Her name is Celeste Tate Harrington. She played the organ with her tongue on the boardwalk for money, and she raised her four kids. But she died tragically in a car accident, believe it or not. She had no arms and legs, but
oh,
she was a
fireman. Yeah. Send me some information on that, Roller. I'm interested. As far as your other questions, and what craps method? Yeah, I don't know what I would title. I don't know what I would title the book. I do keep a list of potential book titles on my phone at all times. I'd have to see which one most applies to my my gambling escapades. Of course I'd be honest. I'm honest here on the radio. If I am honest with you guys about my drunken escapades and shenanigans, of course I'd be honest when it comes to trying to sell a book. In terms of a craps system, I have been trying a form of dice setting that one of the guests that we had on recently recommended. And I have to tell you, on my last Atlantic City trip, I had two of the best rolls I've ever had. So I did well. But it's pardon the pun, it's a crapshoot. As far as the system goes, this is – the system I use is not a good system because you can lose a lot of money quickly. So what I do is I place a pass line bet. I bet max odds, back it up with maximum odds. Then I will place a come bet, and I'll do max odds on the come bet. And I'll if they'll set up my come bet, then I'll do it again, and I'll do it again, and I'll do it again until I have every single number on the craps table covered with a come bet with max odds. Now, obviously, the problem there is if the shooter rolls a seven, then let's say it's even just a $10 table, I'm out I'm out, you know, $500. So, you know, that's a tough proposition. So it's a risky one. But if a shooter holds the dice for a long time, then you make a lot of money. That's what happened to me on my last trip there. I did really well using that method, which I don't recommend to anybody. If you do anything, I would say place one pass line bet and then one come bet. That's a good conservative way. When I'm teaching someone craps or they give me $10 to make a bet for them, that's what I always do to them. Pass line bet, back it up with odds. Come bet, back that up with odds. 800-848-9222. Let me say hello to Ralph in Scarsdale. Hello, Ralph.
Yeah, hi, Frank. Listen, I have a question. John Cassavetes, a cat man. We know he's bright. He knows his ABCs. He's rich. He lives well. He's socially regarded. He has a beautiful wife, Margot. Yet recently, on every one of his own shows between 5 and 6 p.m. weekdays, he finds at least one or two times to scream, "I'm mad as hell, and I'm not going to take her anymore." Well, what is he mad about?
Well, I think he's mad about, and that's from the movie Network, I think he's mad about a lot of things. I think he's mad about inflation. I don't want to speak for him, but he's mad about inflation. He's mad about kind of maybe a class in Washington that doesn't seem to listen to ordinary people. He's mad about a system that seems to work well for insiders, not as well for the American people as a whole. I know he's mad about what he terms, this is his description, the rise of the regressive socialists and their seemingly increasing influence within the Democratic Party, a party that he was a member of for most of his life. So, I mean, that's, I think, where we'd go for starters. 800-848-WABC. Very quickly, Douglas in Brooklyn. You've been holding a while. Hey, Doug.
Hello, Frankie. How are you?
Hey, Doug, real quick. Only have about 40 seconds. Go ahead.
Okay. What is the prospects for recovery of the New York City hotel industry?
You know, I'm actually very bullish. I think now that travel has opened up again and now that the vaccine is very readily available and that you have to get the vaccine to travel here, I think you are going to see the hotel industry pop, just as restaurants are popping. I think that you are going to see a full recovery of the New York hotel industry within the next 2 years. That is my prediction, and I stand by that. Now, if I'm lucky enough to still be on the radio in 2 years, play the tape back and we'll see how we did. Nate, coming up next hour, should we legalize prostitution in New York? We're going to get into it with a prostitute, Liara Rue. She'll be my guest. We'll talk about that and a few other issues as well. Until next hour, remember, help control the pet population. Get your dog or cat spayed or neutered.
This is The Other Side of Midnight with Frank Morano.
They're running a strange program, y'all.
Talk Radio 77 WABC. Now, here's Frank Morano.
Thank you.
So one of the things that I really enjoy talking about is, you know, sociology, modern sociology in a fun way, namely the differences between the generations, right? We've talked about what happens with the Generation Z people. We've talked about what happens with baby boomers. We've talked about what happens with Generation Xers. And we've certainly talked about what happens with millennials. Now, funny thing happened yesterday. Now, millennials, if you're not up on this, and I love when people call them millenniums. So anybody that wants to call in on this and call them millenniums, feel free to do it, because I think that's a much funnier way to refer to it. But so millennials are anyone born between the years 1981 and 1996. Those are millennials. So I was going through the news preparing for the show, and I found, for some reason, so many of the stories that I was looking at in terms of potential content for the show all had to do with millennials. So millennials are all part of that coveted 25 to 54 year old age group that advertisers always covet. And while we're already the most listened to radio show in our time slot, AM or FM, among all radio listeners, it couldn't hurt to get a few more millennials listening. So I thought, why don't we try and do a millennial update, and we'll see how it works out. So if you're a millennial out there, be ready to call in and react to some of these stories, and you'll be our impromptu millennial panel. Now, article in the New York Post yesterday, the high of becoming TikTok famous is killing not only millennials, but Generation Z people. Generation Z is the group under the millennials. And TikTok, if you're not up on this, I'm not on TikTok. I don't know anything about TikTok. But it's a video social media platform, basically. Right? People like it. It's all the buzz. And it chronicles this woman, Tessie Heyer's son, who was dying to be famous. And he participated in a deadly TikTok stunt. The mother said, if I would have known about some of the dangerous things he was doing in his TikTok videos as his mother, I would have stopped him and he'd still be here with me. This woman's only 37. The Florida woman's 18-year-old son, Timothy Iza Hall, known to his more than 273,000 followers as Timbo the Redneck, died on July 31st while attempting a fishtailing stunt to impress his online audience. The daredevil deed propelled Hall out of his beloved truck's driver's side window, his 4,000-pound-plus pickup nicknamed Big Booty Judy, after he received it as a high school graduation gift in May, toppled on its side and onto his body, crushing his internal organs. Timbo died with more than 2.5 million likes to his credit. He is just one of the disturbing and growing number of so-called digital influencers who've recently suffered severe skull-breaker injuries, dry scoop-induced heart attacks, possible eating disorders, and even deaths while executing these reckless stunts in the name of social media stardom via TikTok. Among the first of these TikTok tragedies was Chloe Phillips, a 15-year-old from Oklahoma who died of a heart attack in August of 2020 after taking on the Benadryl challenge, in which the goal is to film oneself hallucinating from the medication. Now, this is just sick. This is sick that there's a social media app that's promoting this kind of behavior. And that's rewarding these kids, they are kids, Generation Zers, not the millennials, with more followers and more likes for engaging in this kind of behavior. Joshua, 12 years old, was discovered unconscious on March 22nd by his twin brother on a bathroom floor of their Colorado home after he attempted the TikTok blackout challenge, in which teens hold their breath until passing out on video. He was pronounced dead at the scene. He was pronounced brain dead and then spent 19 days on life support before dying. This is going on all over the country. Deaths by suicide are racking up by teens and 20-somethings despite millions of followers. One person said, my son loved TikTok and always wanted to make the best videos for his fans. Jeez. But he took his love of being popular on the app too far, and now he's gone forever, and my heart's broken. This is crazy. This is absolutely crazy. TikTok and other platforms are constantly raising the bar on what it takes to be widely noticed and what it takes to sustain that top ranking status. And unless the apps become more proactive about immediately banning these dangerous trends, then I am afraid we're going to see more of this. Your reaction, 800-848-9222. That's 1-800-848-9222. If you're a millennial, we will put you to the front of the line for the next 10 minutes. Millennials go to the front of the line because we know millennials don't like to wait. 800-848-WABC if you want to be heard as part of the millennial update. Now, Wall Street Journal yesterday, millennials. This is a column by Mary Eberstadt. Millennials, put away childish political things. The woke claim to own you simply by virtue of your youth. You are overdue for upward moral mobility. And she goes on to write, as the election results of 2021 suggest a chill in the air for the left, the time has come to talk to younger voters, millennials and Generation Z, about America's future. The message can be distilled in a single sentence. You've been robbed. You've been robbed of something treasured by millions of less literate Americans before you. Knowledge and appreciation of your own country and its symphonic, tumultuous, sometimes riven, and always illuminating history. According to some of today's loudest and most influential voices, the U.S. is an irredeemable cesspool of racism and bigotry. This lie has resulted in a wide patriotism gap. In 2020, according to one poll, under a quarter of Democrats surveyed said they were extremely proud to be Americans, as opposed to almost three quarters of Republicans. Only a third of Americans your age say the same thing. Ask yourselves why. Much of us wouldn't trash talk our families. Most of us wouldn't trash talk our neighborhoods. Think about that the next time someone trash talks your national home and neighborhood, your country. Many of today's young, this is all from this Wall Street Journal piece, many of today's young have been robbed, too, of another source of immaterial wealth, the consolations and joys of family life. This theft is due in part to generational arithmetic. Today's younger adults hail from smaller networks of kinship than earlier generations. You're more likely to have lacked a father at home and to have had fewer siblings, cousins, uncle, and aunts than your forebears. Some of you have been robbed of another rich inheritance, organized religion. Men and women throughout the ages concluded that humanity exists within some form of a sacred order. And then I'm not going to read the whole thing, but it is well written. So I'll tell you what I will do. I'm going to post this on my Facebook page so you can read the whole thing. Just go to facebook.com/MoranoFan if you want to read it. It's facebook.com/MoranoFan. But this brings us to the political choice before you. Today's neo-Marxism and identity politics seek to co-opt your youthful energies into a lifetime of performative rancor. Is that what you want? And then gets into some other things about wokeness, this and that. 800-848-WABC if you want to comment on that aspect of millennial culture. Millennials are also driving a building boom in Baltimore, of all places. A building boom in Baltimore is being driven by millennials who, as it turns out, want new construction. Parts of Brewers Hill have exploded within the past 5 to 10 years, with growth seen mostly along the waterfront areas. And Annie Milley, executive director of Live Baltimore, said most of the new buildings are apartments, not condos, as the millennial generation dictates the marketplace and causes a high demand for rentals. And they've got to be new rentals. So millennials want those rental apartments. Washington Post. an opinion piece by Sonny Bunch, a contributing columnist to that newspaper. Will movie theaters survive? That depends on millennials. And I love how he begins this column. He says, millennials are the serial killers of our time. Millennials are killing home ownership. We're killing casual dining, because he's a millennial. We're killing wedding traditions, soda, even crime. But here's one thing we might save. Movie theaters. Of course, we've already been accused of killing the movie business. And to be fair, we've done our best to hobble the theatrical experience. We are the generation that invented Netflix and chill, after all. We're the early adopters of streaming and binge-watching, raised in a world where DVRs radically transformed how and how swiftly programming could be consumed. Before the pandemic, 18% of millennials reported going to the movies weekly, 27% reported going monthly, highest numbers in any age group. Since the pandemic, those numbers have dipped. Only 8% of millennials have gone weekly over the last year. Only 17% report attending movies monthly. Generation Z, the group younger than the millennials, they actually report going to the movies more than the millennials. 800-848-9222 if you want to talk about whether or not millennials are going to save movie theaters. And then finally, this is the last one I'll mention in our millennial update. Nearly a third of all millennials identify as LGBTQ. This is a study by Arizona Christian University, so consider the source. Also, a very small sample size, 600 millennials aged 18 to 37. See, I don't think they should have included people between the age of 18 and 23 because they're not millennials. But the research defines millennials for the purposes of this study as people born from 1984 to 2003, compared with most studies that define the term as being, the age group I mentioned earlier. 39% of the 30% of millennials who identified as LGBTQ were between the ages of 18 and 24. See, I think this whole study is skewed. I think it's more the Generation Z group that identifies more as lesbian, gay, bisexual, transgender, and queer, I think is the Q. And it's less the millennials. But if you want to comment on that as well, their findings suggest millennials are mostly anti-establishment, unpatriotic, pro-freedom of religion, and desperately trying to find a purpose. That's according to this study that's in the Daily Mail. So if you want to comment on any of these millennial stories, the TikTok deaths, the killing of movie theaters, the fact that a third of millennials and Gen Zs, according to this one study, are now gay, lesbian, bisexual, transgender, queer. Or if you want to comment on the fact that millennials want not houses, they want apartments. And that's driving the building boom in America's cities. Be heard. 800-848-9222. We will put millennials to the front of the line. We're not going to ask for ID. So if you claim you're a millennial, you'll go to the front of the line. If not, we'll deal on the honor system. 800-848-9222. That's 1-800-848-WABC. 1-2-3-4. Open lines if you want to jump on board. Michael is in Ridgewood. Hello, Michael.
Hello, Frank.
Hi.
Millennials doing this TikTok stuff, it's got to be stopped before many people wind up dead. It's tragic. It hurts the parents of these kids. These kids have a lot to give America. The next few products here,
all right.
Take a look at the inventions America gave the world, courtesy of Edison and Eastman Kodak, the motion picture camera and film, the motion picture projector, the phonograph.
Yeah, hey, America's done a lot of great things, Michael. Look, as far as your call to put a stop to these stunts. I agree with you. If TikTok can't put a stop to it themselves, then I think you may have to look at some greater regulation by Congress or somebody else here. We'll see. 800-848-WABC if you want to comment on anything from the millennial update, any of those stories. Meantime, I do want to tell you, whether you're millennial, Gen Z, Gen X, baby boomer, or even the greatest generation, who couldn't use a healthier digestive system? That's where Get the Tea from Life Change Tea, from GetTheTea.com comes in. This is a great product. It gives you a ton of energy without caffeine. It is a gentle daily cleanse that tastes great. Comes in three flavors. I like the pomegranate, but they're all good. And if you are feeling stopped up and bloated, that's never a good thing, and this is something that will help with that. It gets all the junk out of your system, all the preservatives, all the chemicals, all the heavy metals that you're consuming on a regular basis. As far as Life Change Tea itself, it's all natural, non-GMO. One package lasts you a whole month. It's available exclusively on the website, GetTheTea.com. That's GetTheTea.com. You can use the promo code Frank for free shipping. It's GetTheTea.com, promo code Frank. It's time to feel relief. And while you're there, you can check out all the other great products designed for your optimal health. Don't miss out. Life Change Tea at GetTheTea.com, but you must use the promo code Frank. It's the tea that makes you go. All right, coming up in just a minute, we're going to talk with another millennial. We'll get her opinion on some of these things. Liara Rue, who is a prostitute and an organizer and a writer. She's got a book out now, which we'll tell you about. But she's also one of the leading voices behind legalizing prostitution in New York State. Good idea? Bad idea? Well, we'll get her take on that and a bunch of other things as well. 800-848-9222 if you want to comment on anything we're discussing. This is The Other Side of Midnight. Straight ahead.
WABC. We are New York on New York's Talk Radio 77 WABC. Now, here's Frank Morano.
This is Frank Morano on 77 WABC, a topic that we have touched upon from time to time over the course of the past year, which has engendered some very surprising reactions, has been the subject of legalizing or decriminalizing prostitution. And if we go that route, How exactly do we decriminalize or legalize prostitution? There's all sorts of proposals out there, and some people are speculating that the upcoming legislative session, the one beginning in January here in New York State, might finally be the one where we make some sort of legalized prostitution statute. Someone that has been very vocal on that front is also somebody who has one of the most talked about books in the whole country. And that is Liara Rue, author of the book, Whore of New York, A Confession. Liara, thanks so much for joining me on the radio.
Thank you for having me. It's a real pleasure.
So, Liara, for people that aren't familiar with your history, explain how you came to be a sex worker and your sort of journey professionally and relationship wise in this profession.
Totally. So I got into the industry actually while I was working in tech, and I really hated my job. I had a friend who was working as a dominatrix, and she said, I might want to consider checking out the industry, because she thought it would suit me. And I tried it out, and I haven't looked back since.
And so you're still active, you're still doing it, you still are making a good living and enjoying it.
Absolutely.
What do you say to those who say that prostitution exploits women specifically, but people in general?
I think there's a really nuanced conversation to be had about people who come to the industry because they have no other options, no other place to turn to. And I think there should be resources made available, like housing, food, for people who really need it. But for some women and other people, you know, there are men in the industry too.
Sure.
It's something that suits them, you know. And obviously, it's not going to be for everyone. I like to compare it to being a mortician, you know. Not everyone wants to be around dead bodies all the time. But for some people, it's great. It's a good way to make a living, and they enjoy it. I think a lot of the danger that can be involved in the industry can come from the criminalization, unfortunately.
Well, that's my view exactly. And I had a friend who was murdered by a date that he had arranged to meet with through Craigslist. Obviously, there's been a lot of discussion about the Craigslist killer and that whole situation. And you have a lot of people, both Johns and escorts themselves, who are victimized, assaulted, robbed, and they feel that because this is an illegal activity, that they have very little recourse to go to law enforcement. So I've always sort of been leaning on the side of decriminalizing or legalizing prostitution. And apparently somebody that seems similarly open to that is New York's new governor, Kathy Hochul. She has indicated that she's looking into a proposal to legalize sex work in the state. Now, this has been pushed by advocates for a long time, including you. Explain to folks, aside from the safety aspect of this, why this is a good thing. What would New Yorkers stand to gain from legalizing prostitution?
I think the main thing that we would stand to gain would be the lack of stigma that would result. I think criminalization really prevents people from sharing with their friends and family what they do. It creates this real sense of shame, unfortunately. And I think sex workers being able to be open about their jobs and what they do might help other people deal with their own sexual shame as well.
Well, and there are apparently in the legislature now two competing bills. One would completely decriminalize sex work. The other prohibits police from charging sex workers, a term that I don't even particularly care for, but it would still allow them to charge clients or Johns. Which of those two proposals do you favor?
So I favor the one that has decriminalization for everyone. Or legalization for everyone, just because, unfortunately, when you look at places where sex workers are legalized but not the Johns, it creates this unfortunate dynamic where people are less willing to share their screening information, and the type of people who seek out sex worker services are more likely to be criminals. You know, they're more willing to cross that line. And so you end up with an industry that's a lot more dangerous than it otherwise would be.
If people are just tuning in, we're talking with Liara Rue, the author of the book Whore of New York, A Confession. It may surprise people to learn that since you're somebody I would characterize as a proud sex worker, you actually come from a very conservative Christian upbringing. How did your upbringing, if at all, influence your decision in terms of choosing your choice of profession?
I think for me, strangely, it didn't have much of an effect at all. I mean, you know, the one thing you could say maybe is that in the Bible, Jesus is friends with all the prostitutes, which to me sounded like a really good time. imagine those dinner parties, right? But I do think that for whatever reason, a lot of the sexual shame that a lot of people with a very Christian upbringing are left with didn't end up sticking on me.
In terms of your, oh, by the way, and we're taping, so I could delete this. I just got a text message from a friend of mine that sent me an article about French fry vodka, and I replied, "That's so gross," and so I sent it to you inadvertently. That was not for you. Just want to be clear.
Okay,
I wanted to duly noted. Ignore that. All right. In terms of sex, that's something that a lot of people view as a very personal, very intimate part of a romantic relationship. Does treating it as a business proposition at all, does that in any way diminish the emotional intimacy that can come with and should come with maybe a intercourse in a romantic relationship?
So I think all of the sex that I have in my intimate romantic relationships is still quite emotionally intense, perhaps more emotionally intense than a lot of people's. But I do also enjoy casual sex. I don't think all sex needs to be this intense spiritual bonding thing. You know, sometimes it can just be fun.
And I was going to ask you about that. And how does your work affect your romantic relationships? How do your romantic partners view what you do for a living? Is there any sort of jealousy involved? Even if people say they're jealous, I could certainly see a number of scenarios where folks may end up being a bit jealous. How does it work for you?
So I think for me personally, it works out because I'm already pretty adventurous and open-minded. And so it filters out all the people who I might eventually scare off anyway.
I see.
I don't have a dating profile out there anymore, but when I was online dating, I just put it right in my profile. So anyone who wasn't into it could just, you know, head out. And I still got a lot of replies.
So. Oh, I can imagine. talking with Liara Rue, the author of the book Whore of New York, a book everybody is talking about. Liara, in terms of if someone is considering becoming an escort, or what term do you prefer? Do you like the term sex worker?
I do, yeah. It's something that came around, I think, in the 70s, and it was very labor-oriented. You know, sex work is work, as opposed to this idea that, you know, prostitution is somehow separate from other workers.
If somebody's listening to this and thinking about pursuing a career as a sex worker themselves, what would they need to keep in mind? What are the characteristics that lead to being a good sex worker, not necessarily in terms of being able to make a living from it, although that's certainly important, but in terms of maybe having the emotional and psychological grounding and balance necessary for a profession, which I imagine can be quite challenging?
You definitely need to have a thick skin. People will say all kinds of things to you in emails or text messages. And you need to be able to just let that roll off your back and move on. I think being really empathetic is very important, too. I think if you're not able to connect with the clients on a certain level, I think my friends who had a harder time in the industry approached it more as like a mechanical thing, whereas people who seem to have a better time in the industry approached it more as a therapeutic type of work.
I can imagine. In terms of what New York is doing, one of the things that one of the benefits of legalizing prostitution that some libertarian activists have pointed to is the potential of getting a lot of tax revenue from it. Is that something that you think New Yorkers should view as a potential benefit?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, if you saw the amount of money that some people are making, there's quite a lot to tax there. I guess I personally am more in favor of taxes that would, hit the pied-à-terres and whatnot. But I mean, it's like weed, you know. All these vices, people spend a lot of money on them.
This is true. Liquor, same thing. Tobacco, same thing.
Mm-hmm.
I bought a cigar recently, and I was amazed at how much of the purchase price of that cigar went towards taxes. Do you think it's realistic to see that we could see sex work decriminalized in New York next year?
Oh, absolutely. I think the tide is really changing And people are really starting to reconsider why they hate the idea of sex work so much. And I think it's because a lot of people are coming out of the closet, talking about their experiences in the industry. Even people that are older, I have a lot of older women friends who, after I wrote my book, started telling me about their own experiences in the industry. And, you know, these are people who have powerful positions now, who are very established in their careers, and it was something they did to make money when they were in their early 20s and living in the city. But yeah, I think it's, you know, as more people talk, it's like the gay rights movement. As mm-hmm. more people come out and talk about it, people start to get a little more comfortable with it.
When I brought this subject up the last time we discussed it on the radio, some of the callers called in and said something to the effect of, well, if a fella that is having a difficult time in his marriage knows that a legalized in a liaison with a prostitute is only a phone call away, and he doesn't have to worry about getting busted by the police or anything like that, doesn't that make it more likely that he would step out on his wife? And couldn't that potentially put a strain on a lot of marriages in the state? What do you say to that argument, that having legally available, readily accessible sex work could actually make a lot of marriages a lot less durable?
I think a lot of those men end up having affairs. And in my experience, just watching, you know, I think affairs, especially if they're emotional and people aren't using protection and everything, can be a lot more damaging to a marriage than a very no-strings-attached, professional, one-off thing, if that makes sense.
No, I think it does. And I'm curious if you can talk a little bit about the notion of no-strings-attached sex among two non-paying people. It was a story I came across recently exploring whether it's really possible to have the so-called friends with benefits arrangement without an emotional connection that gets messy and ruins a friendship. What is your take? If, let's say, there are two people listening to us right now, driving home from somewhere, they have a platonic or a personal relationship, they may find one another attractive, but not necessarily want to delve in to a full-blown romantic relationship. Is a no-strings-attached sexual liaison really something that two people can do without necessarily having the emotional baggage that so often comes with it?
Oh, absolutely. And I've had quite a few of those that have lasted for years and are continuing on even now. I think a lot of it has to do with how experienced someone is with navigating these kinds of things. And I do have to say a lot of my friends with benefits type situations are often the most seamless with other sex workers.
Oh, really? That's interesting.
Yeah.
Do you notice any common trends when it comes to gender and the ability to have one of these no strings attached relationships? I mean, the old stereotype was that men are able to treat sex more like shaving or more like some sort of bodily maintenance, whereas women so often always have to have some sort of an emotional connection. Clearly, that's not true in your case. I'm curious if you've detected any trends in that realm along gender lines.
Totally. I mean, maybe it's just the men that I'm attracted to or who are attracted to me, but I found that they're often a lot more interested in having a more traditional monogamous relationship than the women that I sleep with. Hmm. Maybe that's just because the women are queer and they're already sort of used to having something that's outside of what's normal in society. But yeah, I gotta say, the boys are usually a lot more clingy than the ladies.
Very interesting. At least with me. Very interesting. I had a feeling that you might say that because talking to friends of mine who've been involved in or attempted arrangements like this, it's so often the men who have had a mm-hmm. difficult time. One of the points against legalization of prostitution has been that this would dramatically expand the sex industry. Now, you mentioned marijuana earlier. We are seeing an expanded marijuana business. Now, I'm not sure if that means more people will actually be smoking marijuana, but would legalization expand the sex work industry? And is that a good thing, a bad thing, or neither?
I think it's kind of neutral, you know? I think it's a job like any other. You know, I would hope everyone getting into it would find it to be a job that they really enjoy, but, you know, not everyone loves their job working at McDonald's either. If you're getting paid a lot more by the hour, that can be attractive for some people. I think it's going to be the type of thing where everyone makes their own assessment of the situation and decides whether it's something they want to pursue. And I think once it is legalized, a lot of people are going to feel a lot more comfortable pursuing it.
One of the arguments in favor of legalization or decriminalization that I've always really found pretty persuasive is what's going on now in terms of child prostitution. We see child prostitution is a big problem all over the world, particularly in countries like India, but it goes on even here in the United States. And I'm wondering what effect legalizing prostitution would have on the prevalence of child prostitution. My belief is that once the sex industry could be regulated and there are safeguards in place, that it could actually lead to a significant reduction in child prostitution. As somebody that knows this world far better than I do, what's your take on that?
Oh, I absolutely agree with you. And one thing we saw after Backpage was taken down, the rates of trafficking actually went up. And unfortunately, that's because the FBI actually worked really closely with Backpage. And Backpage would send them anyone who looked suspicious, who looked underage, so that they could go and check on them. But after Backpage was shut down by the feds, unfortunately, they weren't able to continue that program for obvious reasons. So a lot of organizations said it became a lot harder for them to monitor people who were in potentially dangerous situations.
No. Last question I'll ask on this front is, I find the same thing to be true of sexually transmitted diseases. If you had certain regulations in place, sort of the way a barbershop is regulated, you would be in a position, the government would be in a position to make sure that people were tested regularly using proper protection, and there'd be much less danger of catching a venereal disease in a paid sexual liaison. Do you think that's the case?
So I think actually that sex workers are already some of the safest people to have sex with. If you look at rates of STDs in sex workers versus the general population, you'll find that the general population actually has way higher STD rates. And that's because people aren't getting tested because they think they're safe. You know, they think they're with someone they can trust. They don't know they're cheating. They don't know, you know, but with sex workers, most of us get tested on a regular basis, just because we know even if we're using condoms regularly, they can break or, you know, there's always accidents that happen. So sex workers are actually the most stringent in what I've seen.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, Liara Rue, you can check out her website, aboutliara.com. That's about Liara.com. You can get the book Whore of New York on there and reach her through there. Liara, I appreciate the education and the time this morning. I hope we could talk again as this legislation makes its way through Albany. You could sort of maybe do play-by-play for us as we go.
Absolutely. I'd really love that.
All right. If you want to comment on any portion of our conversation, you're welcome to give me a call, 1-800-848-WABC. That's 1-800-848-9222. This is The Other Side of Midnight. Straight ahead.
Wherever you go, go, go with 77 WABC. Go, go!
We are New York on New York's Talk Radio 77 WABC. Now, here's Frank Morano.
right, Neil Sedaka singing O Carol. This is The Other Side of Midnight. We'll take your calls in just a minute. 1-800-848-WABC. That's 1-800-848-9222. Allow me a moment, though, to tell you a little bit about legacy precious metals. Inflation is a big problem, and I think everybody agrees that the best way to break the back of inflation is with gold, silver, and precious metals. And I really think that if you want to keep inflation in check, gold has to be a part of your portfolio. And if gold is going to be a part of your portfolio, go to the experts. Go to Legacy Precious Metals. These guys are great. They know their stuff, and they're going to cater their advice to you based on your individual situation. What's good for you might not be good for me, depending on your age or if you're already retired or if you're waiting to retire. If you have an existing retirement account, you can think about rolling it into a gold or a silver IRA. And if you do so, you can do it with Legacy Precious Metals. Gold really should be a part of every investor's portfolio. It's a part of mine. This is the company that you can trust because they give you unbiased information. Contact Legacy Precious Metals today. Call 866-932-0635. That's 866-932-0635. Or you can go to the website, visit legacypminvestments.com. That's legacypminvestments.com. They have this free investment guide that you can download. I downloaded it yesterday. And what I didn't realize until yesterday is once you download that, it asks you, how did you hear about us? And there's a little check, a little menu, drop down menu, and you can check the box that says Frank Moreno. So it's Frank Moreno, Larry Kudlow, Ben Ferguson, other people. And I would appreciate it, even if you're not necessarily interested in investing in gold, tell them you heard about it on Frank Moreno anyway. This way, the good folks over at Legacy know that their ads are getting a response. 800-848-WABC. If you want to comment on the movement towards legalizing prostitution in New York State or more broadly, 800-848-9222. Let me say hello to Larry in Brooklyn. Hello, Larry.
Yeah, hi, Frank. There was a question that you asked her that you got a totally disjointed answer. I think she didn't understand the question. You wanted to know whether men could treat sex more casually. Traditionally, they've always treated sex more casually than women. I think you asked her a loaded question, expecting her to talk about how women who are prostitutes, they have sex is very casual to them, so they equalize the man, the stereotypical man. But what's going to happen? I'll answer the question for you. What's going to happen?
Well, I thought she gave a good answer. Actually, I mean, it was her opinion, and based on her experience, she said that her experience, the men are more clingy than the women.
But she was comparing the men to her lesbian partners. That's hardly a comparison
to
heterosexual women in a relationship.
I see. Well, that's fair. That's fair. But go ahead. Finish what you were saying.
Yeah. So what I'm going to say is if they legalize prostitution, that's first of all, if you look at the inroads that feminism and homosexual marriage have made on the traditional male-female relationship, if they legalize prostitution, okay, you're going to have situations where guys' girlfriends are not going to take them seriously because they're going to be prostitutes on the side, and they're going to get very casual about sex. So they're not going to be clingy at all to their boyfriends, and that's going to be another breakdown in the male-female relationship.
So your view is, Larry, that if it's legal, then so many more women would choose to become prostitutes than are currently prostitutes, and that will take a toll on conventional non-paying relationships.
They're going to start experimenting with it, and it's going to feel good, and all of a sudden they're going to be numb to sex, and that's going to break down the male-female relationship.
Well, that's why I asked the question. I asked both of those questions. I said, one, would this lead to a dramatic increase in sex work, paid sex work? And I also asked what kind of person can do this. And I tend to agree with her that not everybody can do this. I think it takes a very specific type of psychology, and I think it takes a very, she used the phrase tough skin, and I think that's probably pretty accurate. I think not everybody can do this. I couldn't do it. I mean, I'm not sure anybody would pay to have sex with me anyway, but I think I would have a real difficult time doing this, and I think a lot of people would. So I think it's a, I don't know that I agree with your premise that all sorts of women would then become prostitutes. I don't think I agree. But you never know. You might be right, because New York doesn't have legalized sex work. We never know. But in places that do, like certain counties in Nevada, I don't think we've seen that. 800-848-9222. Jeff is in Jersey City. Hello, Jeff.
Hey, Frank. Thanks for taking the call. You know what? On the woman was really very interesting. What's her name again? Kind of like a French name. The whore of New York.
Yeah, awesome. Yeah, it's really interesting. Her name's Liara Roux, R-O-U-X.
Okay. Personally, myself, for a long time, I've been in favor of legalizing prostitution for a lot of reasons. Right now, though, with the one reservation I have a little bit, the way our city turned, or hopefully it's going to go back to normalcy, is the state of lawlessness and the wild kind of behavior, Frank, you know, that we have in the city right now, you know. But once the city gets stable, I say go full tilt with legalizing prostitution. A lot of reasons. A guy that may feel like drifting from his wife, curiosity, whatever his need is, you know what? It's better that he go with a prostitute his wife is never going to find out about.
Well, that's what she said. Right? She said these guys that are experiencing some sort of marital discord or relationship wanderlust will need to, if they don't go to a prostitute, they're going to go have an affair.
That's the worst thing, Frank.
Yeah, you know, I agree.
Aside from child abuse or you know, the trafficking or something like that, is sleeping. Frank, you wouldn't sleep with your buddy's wife, so neither would I. And you know what? That's the worst thing. And you know what? If my buddy did that to me, I'd get my gun and I'd go blow his head off. And my wife is probably next. I might think twice about her, but my buddy, he definitely gets all the rounds in the chamber into his blood. I splatter his blood all over the room. So
yeah, let me go on record as discouraging anybody from doing that. Even if somebody sleeps with your wife, you don't want to kill them because, you know, you can always get divorced, but it's not worth getting the electric chair or going to life in prison for. Don't do that. Don't do that. If someone sleeps with your wife, then you're better off without her, perhaps, right? Look at it as a blessing. Don't view it as an opportunity to commit murder. Ari is in Manhattan. Hello, Ari.
Yes. Hi, Frank. Good morning.
Morning.
I'm a psych major, and I'm going for my master's degree. And I was listening to this woman's conversation. You know, it's interesting. When you say prostitution, are we talking about heterosexual prostitution? Or in this day and age, could we also have homosexual?
I think she does both.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, well, that's an issue. You've got about maybe 100 different serious issues surrounding this whole thing of possible prostitution in New York City. How do you advertise it? You have COVID. What restrictions are they going to place on customers? The age limits, the zoning. There's probably enough issues to probably kill it the minute it gets into any legislative mode.
Well, I don't know. I mean, they came pretty close to passing it last year, and I think this year, next year, could be the session that finally does see it pass. We'll see. 800-848-WABC. Big Julie is in Brooklyn. Hello, Big Julie.
Frankie, this thing about prostitution or legalization of that, it's a yes-no answer. And I only talk from experience because my ex-wife was an ex-call girl.
Oh, really? While you were together or before you guys were together?
No, before we were together. Before we were together. And I wound up having three children with this woman. I was married to her for 10 years. Let me tell you, if they're going to legalize it, first off, for the protection of any women, because I only speak not only of my ex, but of my ex's friends who are in that industry for many years. The psychological and the emotional effects of what they go through later on in life needs to be, you know, observed. Because what happens is in that industry, if they decide to legalize it, I think they should also make it, as part of the industry, a psychological evaluation every now and then to see how their emotions and how their souls are acting, because eventually it does take hold of them.
Well, that's interesting, Julie. I can definitely see that being a wise thing. That makes sense. So yeah, as somebody that married a former call girl, what's your view on legalization? Let's say they were to move forward with legalization with some of the provisions that you're talking about here. What's your view?
Well, my view is they should legalize it because there's always some kind of a pimp trying to hold
them. That's my view exactly. That's my view exactly. Thank you. 800-848-9222. John is in Las Vegas. Hello, John.
Hey, how are you? I used to live in the East Village, and, you know, during the 45 years I lived down there, there were a lot of women that I knew that did sex work. Mm-hmm. And a lot of times it was because they were addicted to heroin.
Sure.
They got into that business. And what I'm trying to say is I think they should legalize it because organized crime and the same kind of criminal syndicates that sell illegal drugs traffic in women. They do both of those things, and maybe that would help stop it. And may also for, you know, women would have more access to drug treatment. People would see it more if they weren't working for some kind of.
Well, also, you could mandate regular drug testing as well, which you can't do now if it's illegal. Great point, John. Thank you. Let me try and squeeze in at least one or two more quick calls. 800-848-9222. Carol is in New Jersey. Hello, Carol.
Hi there, Frank. I have no comments about that whole situation. I've never lived my life like that. I never would. I'm a very intelligent person. I've had important jobs in my life. I don't need to have sex to make money.
All right. Well, that's why I think that to the caller Larry's point, if it were legalized, I don't think you'd see a lot of women who aren't considering it as a profession now all of a sudden consider it, to your point.
Right.
But thank you for calling, Carol. And for those hoping to pay for a date with you, I guess they're out of luck, even if New York does legalize prostitution. There you have it. All right. 800-848-WABC. Want to remind you, please email me if you have any questions, comments, thoughts on anything. frank.morano@wabcradio.com. Daniel emailed me that he says that the Q in LGBTQ stands for questioning. Questioning. There you go. Thank you, Daniel. If you want to find me on Twitter, you can do so at Frank Morano. That's Frank, M-O-R-A-N-O. And we're also on Facebook. Right now, we're only four Twitter followers short of another Twitter threshold, 7,300. So we'd like everybody to follow me on Twitter so that we can eclipse that threshold. And on Facebook as well, facebook.com/MoranoFan. And it's facebook.com/MoranoFan. And if you do like the Facebook page, then you'll immediately get an opportunity to join the Facebook group, which is a forum for discussing the subjects, the guests, everything that is discussed on this show. And again, if you want to send me some snail mail, we're going to read through your best mail on Tuesday. So if you want to send a good old-fashioned piece of snail mail, envelope, stamp, and all, or anything to me here, you can do so P.O. Box 1777, New York, New York, 10163. Just send it to Attention Frank Morano. Again, P.O. Box 1777, New York, New York, 10163. Those of you that are holding, we'll get to you a little later. We got denunciations coming up. Curtis Sliwa will join us for a discussion about his future. And we'll get into some other issues as well. A lot of stuff coming your way until 5 a.m. when you'll get to hear the WABC Early News with Juliette Huddy and me. And a whole lot of stuff to get to that I am very much looking forward to talking about with you. Until next hour, keep asking questions.
This is The Other Side of Midnight with Frank Morano.
They're running a strange program, y'all.
Talk Radio 77 WABC. Now, here's Frank Morano.
We'll be right back. everyone. This is The Other Side of Midnight. I'm Frank Moreno. Coming up in about 20 minutes, we're going to talk with the beret-clad Avenger himself, the one and only Curtis Sliwa, a recent Republican nominee for mayor. What's he going to do next? Politics, radio, television, podcast, just focus on the guardian angel, something else. We're going to drill down on him for some details. Also want to get his thoughts on some of the issues that are happening in the city and where we're going in terms of, you know, the Adams administration. We're hearing some names being bandied about of folks that might be commissioners or have various other positions in the Adams administration. We'll see what Curtis thinks of them so far. I thought on election night, Curtis gave a very gracious speech, and he gave the kind of speech that I wish every politician would give. We said, look, I'm supporting Eric Adams. I'm rooting for him to do well. Hope he does do well for the sake of the city. I thought it was great. Meantime, some people that are not so great are the people that have wound up on this My denunciation list.
The Other Side of Midnight presents Denunciations.
Kills me to do it, but I absolutely have to denounce my friend, one of my closest friends. If you look at the signature that is on my marriage certificate, it's his as a witness. My friend Brendan Lantry, now Judge Brendan T. Lantry. He was elected to the civil court last Tuesday, which I was thrilled about. Elected overwhelmingly, 77% of the vote. I supported him. I contributed to him. But months ago, we had made arrangements that the right after he was elected, we would go to Atlantic City. And this was to be my final trip to Atlantic City until my baby is born. So, lo and behold, we decided we weren't going to do it the weekend after the election, but the weekend following the weekend after the election. So we had plans to go either today or tomorrow or both, probably just today. And all of a sudden, a day or two ago, now I'm trying to get a handle from him on what day are we going and so forth, because I wanted to go see this Andrew Cuomo musical, so I'm trying to arrange my schedule around it. So all of a sudden, a day or two ago, he says, no, I'm not going to be able to make it. I can't go. I have plans. Now, I don't understand how someone, especially someone that's running to be a judge and sit in judgment of others, can make plans, adhere to them for months and months and months, and then all of a sudden say, oh, well, I now have plans. And then if you have plans that must supersede our existing plans, then why would you not disclose what those plans are? So that was annoying. I mean, you know, Brendan's a great guy, and I'm sure he'll be a great judge. But not getting off on the right foot with me so far. Now, maybe it's a blessing in disguise so that I can go see this Andrew Cuomo musical Saturday night, Turtle on a Fence Post. And my wife didn't really want me to go to Atlantic City for a day anyway. She wants me to be nearby in case she goes into labor or something. So I kind of told her that that's why I wasn't going. But the truth is, Brendan Lantry'd me at the last minute. That's why I've renamed him Judge Brendan Cantry. All right, I want to denounce Hawk Newsom, a Black Lives Matter leader who vowed there'll be riots, fire, and bloodshed if Mayor-elect Eric Adams follows through with his promise to bring plainclothes anti-crime cops to battle New York's surge in violent crime. Now, he said this after he gets a meeting with Eric Adams. The guy got a sit down with Eric Adams, and now he is rewarding the access that Adams gave him by essentially being a terrorist. A terrorist that is threatening the people of New York. This is outrageous. This guy is a disgrace. This guy ought to have no credibility. And I can't imagine that anyone's going to follow him. And I hope they don't. And I hope Eric Adams shows what he's made of here. And I'm going to get into this with Curtis in about 20 minutes. I hope Eric Adams shows what he's made of here by not allowing these political terrorists to have their way in the city, as they so often did under Mayor de Blasio. I want to denounce the Norfolk Police Department. They have fired a high-ranking police officer who donated to the defense fund anonymously of Kyle Rittenhouse. This is outrageous. So Lieutenant William Kelly served as the executive officer of the Norfolk PD's Internal Affairs Division. He made an anonymous $25 donation to Rittenhouse's defense in September. However, he used an email address linked to himself. Now, then there was a data breach of the Christian crowdfunding site GiveSendGo, which showed official email addresses belonging to many police officers and public officials. The information was shared with The Guardian by the transparency group Distributed Denial of Secrets. So then they fired him. They fired him. Now, this is outrageous. To fire someone for an anonymous donation as a result of a hack, this is crazy. This is absolutely crazy. And I hope this guy is able to get another job with another police department somewhere in Virginia or somewhere nearby, because this is just awful. I want to denounce the Great Meadow Correction Center, correctional facility, a maximum security facility more than 200 miles north of New York City. It is the worst prison in New York State. Now, what's happening at Rikers is bad, but if you look at what's being reported in The Nation, what's going on at the Great Meadow Correctional Facility would make you blush. If you go there, you see nearly daily assaults on incarcerated people by staff. You see inmates fighting with other inmates, very little protection against extreme heat, medical neglect, and when incarcerated people do report abuses, their grievances are rarely acted upon. Multiple incarcerated people and their family members told New York Focus and The Nation that they stay silent for fear of retaliation. This is not how a prison is supposed to run. And this nine acre campus needs to be totally reformed. They need new leadership at this campus. I also have to denounce everybody that is phoning in death threats to these Republicans that voted for infrastructure. The latest is now this guy who was arrested for threatening the life of Congressman Andrew Garbarino. This fellow, Andrew Garbarino, voted. He listed all the great things this infrastructure bill was going to do for Long Island. All these roads that should have been replaced in the aftermath of Sandy. Now they're going to be replaced. He goes into all this other stuff. And then this guy, he gets this death threat, and apparently a pretty frightening one. He basically said not only would Garbarino die, but everybody on his effing staff would die. Congressman Don Bacon, his office has received a surge of calls from people that are just confused about the bill. They don't understand it. Congressman Fred Upton also receiving death threats. This is nuts. This is absolutely nuts. Guys, if you don't like a piece of legislation, run against your member of Congress. Donate to the other guy. Vote for the other guy. But for you to threaten someone's life because they voted for infrastructure, you're a total loser, and I do denounce you. I must also denounce Travis Scott. By now you've probably heard about this horrible Astroworld performance. There have now been 9 people who died in this Astroworld performance. This winner kept playing. He kept performing while people were being stomped on in front of him. And then you might say, oh, maybe the lights, he didn't see it. Maybe the noise, he didn't realize it. I don't know how you don't realize it. The police are on the scene. There's paramedics on the scene. There's people writhing and screaming in pain. I don't know how you don't realize it. But let's say you don't. You know what he did after this? I mean, he kept playing for another 45 minutes or so after people started getting trampled upon and dying. After all this, after the injuries were known and the like, Travis Scott went to Dave and Buster's. He went to an after party at Dave and Buster's, which is like a sports bar kind of a thing. I mean, this guy's a grade A Cicola. So, Travis Scott, I do denounce you. I must also denounce animal fat. A new study finds that it's not the amount of fat that's in your diet, it's the type of fat. And if you get your fat from animal sources, this study from the Harvard T.H. Chan School of Public Health shows that animal fat leads to a heightened stroke risk. So it's not great for me who likes cheese, but it's not great for you if you like steak or cheeseburgers and things of that nature. Animal fat leads to increased stroke risk. This is a real study. These results come from 27 years of data from more than 117,000 healthcare professionals. So stay away from that animal fat. I want to denounce Mac Jones. Mac Jones is a football player. He's the quarterback for the New England Patriots. And there was a very bizarre, it was a play last Sunday while the Patriots were playing the Panthers. And Mac Jones, after a sack and a recovery situation, he does the dirtiest tackle that I've ever seen. I mean, he basically grabs this guy's ankle. So Burns, the guy that he tackled, had a strip sack of Jones on a third and fifth play. So Burns got up and tried to chase after the loose ball. He doesn't have the ball, keep in mind. Burns gets up, tries to chase after the loose ball. Jones latches on to Burns' ankle and twisted his ankle to take him down. Now, he said he thought Burns had the ball. Baloney. Baloney. The guy was ticked off. He got sacked. And he went after the guy that sacked him. That's what happened. And if he did think he had the ball, I realize quarterbacks don't know how to tackle as well. But you know how not to tackle. And the way to not to tackle is to take someone's ankle and twist it. This guy could have been out for the rest of the year. He could have done a serious permanent injury. This guy ought to be punished, he ought to be fined, and he ought to be shunned. And I'll tell you what I'm doing. I'm denouncing him. So, Mac Jones, I do denounce you. I want to denounce deathscience.org. David Saunders died on August 24th, age 98. This guy's a real hero. Decorated Second World War II veteran, decorated Korean War veteran, died of COVID. His wife, Elsie, tried to carry out his wishes by donating his body to scientific research. So she tried to donate it to the local university, LSU, Louisiana State University. Says, we don't want it since he had COVID. We don't want it. So she finds another group to donate it to called MedEd Labs. Ultimately, MedEd Labs ends up, I guess, selling this body to a company called deathscience.org. Apparently, according to the folks at MedEd Labs, the folks at deathscience.org were completely dishonest about what they were going to do with this body and what they did in general. What they did is they put on a show. Deathscience.org, they put on a show to see this guy, his dead body, dissected in front of a large crowd. Spectators paid up to $500 a ticket to attend this session as part of the Oddities and Curiosities Expo, a touring exhibition which says it attracts lovers of the strange, unusual, and bizarre with taxidermy. Do you think this widow would have donated this World War II veteran's body to someone that was going to treat him like a showpiece, like a carnival sideshow piece? No. No, of course not. And she said that. She wanted to donate the body, and he wanted to donate his body to help people. Not so this greedy company, deathscience.org, could make money. And at the very least, they should have asked her permission, which she would not have given. And finally, I want to denounce Glenn Youngkin's son. We don't have his name because he's a minor. He's only 17 years old. This kid is a real winner. Glenn Youngkin is, of course, the governor-elect in Virginia. His son, who is only 17 years old, which is 1 year below the legal voting age in Virginia, tried to vote twice on Election Day despite being too young to vote. He twice tried to cast a ballot on Election Day, even though he's not eligible to vote. That's confirmed by election officials. Thankfully, he was unsuccessful. They were able to determine he wasn't eligible to vote. They didn't allow him to cast a ballot. And the Fairfax County Office of Elections is investigating the incident. So this 17-year-old son of the Virginia governor-elect twice tried to cast a ballot, even though he knew it was against the law. And yet, this is voter fraud. He was trying to commit voter fraud. So Glenn Youngkin's son, I may not name you, but I do denounce you. All right. We're going to talk to Curtis Sliwa in a few minutes. I will take your calls at 800-848-9222. That's 1-800-848-WABC. But in the meantime, thankfully, we stopped that video stream at WABCRadio.tv. We have been doing the first hour of this show on a live video stream, and they do some great work over there at WABCRadio.tv. The Bernie and Sid show, a lot of other great shows are video streamed on there. But I really can't stand looking at myself now because I look like a mixture, a cross between Dom DeLuise and John Candy. I am looking terrible. I'm looking terrible. The one of the biggest struggles I have now when I leave the house is finding clothes that I can still fit into. And this is a real problem. And when I was talking about this recently, Mitch Suss, the founder of the Skinny Center in Westchester, he was listening, and his team of weight loss experts who've done such a great job with Greg Kelly here at WABC, they said, look, we've done a lot of great work with Greg. Greg looks great. Greg feels great. Why don't we do the same with you? And that's what we're going to do. Later this month, I am going to visit the good folks over at the Skinny Center. And I am going to try this program of theirs. They do exclusive lab testing, and they get to the root cause of why you're not losing weight. Their program reveals genetic markers, and it isolates hormone imbalances and the underlying causes. So I was pretty inspired by seeing Greg and pretty convinced about how effective these guys are. So I'm in, and hopefully you'll join us on this journey with the Skinny Center. Give them a call, 914-703-4811. Write this number down, 914-703-4811, or go to theskinnycenter.com. That's theskinnycenter.com.
77 WABC, All American. Frank Morano. 77 WABC.
This is Tears for Fears, Everybody Wants to Rule the World. Well, joined on the line right now by a familiar voice to the WABC audience. He didn't want to rule the world, but at least the city of New York. He was unsuccessful in that attempt. Very happy to be joined by Republican, former Republican nominee for mayor of New York City in the most recent election, Curtis Sliwa. Curtis, are you demanding a recount?
No, Frank. My concession speech was quick. Right at the start of the night's end of the count. And it was clear from the beginning I didn't have the votes necessary to beat Eric Adams, although I did pull some surprises out there.
Yeah, you know, you're not kidding. Not only did you much better than any other Republican that's run for citywide office since 2009, and that includes some big names, Joe Loda, Nicole Malliotakis, Joe Borelli, Eric Ulrich, you put up a better number than that, than all of them. You won in just about all the Asian areas in New York City, and some numbers that I saw yesterday, you won 14 or 15 different assembly districts in New York City. All but two of them are Democratic districts. So these districts that have veteran Democratic officials, some of these districts you won with 63-65% of the vote. So clearly the people of New York City may be more receptive to your message than a lot of people in the press made it out to be.
Oh, absolutely. And also within the Republican Party itself, as you know, most of my opposition initially was in the Republican Party amongst the leadership. And they said Curtis Sliwa can't win. As a result of Curtis Sliwa being at the top of the ticket, everyone down ballot will lose. We may end up with only one city council person in the entire city council. That would be the reelection of Joe Borelli. And Frank, look what happened. Look what happened.
Right. Five, you know, looks like five at the moment. Five Republican council members, more than they've had in years. So absolutely. Certainly. How do you feel about the race, Curtis? Do you feel like it went well? Do you feel like this was a worthy endeavor? Any regrets?
No regrets whatsoever. As you know, there was a dearth of candidates. Nobody of significance who was running on the Republican line. And it was just going to be a cakewalk for whichever of the Democrats would win through the ranked choice primary situation that they were going through. And then the candidate was chosen by the chair people, the leaders, the majority of the leaders in the city, Fernando Mateo. He just was an unknown entity. And I said, no. It's a law and order year. This is my forte. This is my strength. That's not Fernando Mateo's strength. And I took it to him and crushed him in the Republican primary, 70-30, and then took on Eric Adams, who basically developed this law and order platform as a way of separating himself from all the other Democrats who were running in their primary campaign. It's not like he was like this 2 years ago. Remember, he was painting Black Lives Matter in the streets of New York City with his teammate, his friend, his partner in the destruction of New York City. Bill de Blasio, the worst mayor of our lifetime. And now all of a sudden he's the champion against Black Lives Matter. Beware. Beware of somebody who is constantly switching like a chameleon.
Well, tell me what you think of what you've heard from Eric Adams so far, both in terms of the whispers about likely appointments and also his newfound embrace of cryptocurrency. Are you liking what you're hearing so far, or is this kind of the situation that you feared?
No. I think you have to give the man his due. He was a duly elected mayor of the city of New York. Look, I think everyone could agree that anybody would be better than Bill de Blasio, including Eric Adams. And I conceded to him. And I don't think you start piling on to the guy who's not even been sworn into office yet. You let him flex. You let him show what he's capable of doing. You give him an opportunity to put his agenda in place. But as I said, that night of the election count, you'll have Curtis Sliwa to kick around because I'm not going anywhere. And I'm going to be a presence within the Republican Party. I think I present the idea of new blood, a different direction. And I got quite a few surprises coming down the pipe, Frank. Quite a few surprises that are going to shock the political world.
Well, now let's talk about politics. And people just tuning in, we're talking with Curtis Sliwa. You could still follow him in social media and follow everything that he's up to. He's just as active now as he was at the height of the campaign. Go to Sliwa4NY.com. Says he has no regrets about running. What about, Curtis, any regrets about things you wish you had done differently or handled differently at any point? Did you ever say, you know, I wish I hadn't done that? Or I wish I had done more of this. Any of that?
No, because remember, I started out in a handicapped position. I had announced in March, the last candidate to announce. I had no money, no structure, no campaign. Put everything together on the fly. Everything turned out a hell of a lot better than anyone had anticipated. And in fact, even the Eric Adams camp doesn't have a bad taste in their mouth for Curtis Sliwa. Been walking around the city, riding the trains ever since the election totals came in. And even hardcore Eric Adams supporters were saying, man, you ran a different kind of a campaign. You ran a campaign promoting that you were going to help the emotionally disturbed persons, the homeless people, the animals, something that's really never been done before. And I think it left a good taste in everybody's mouth, even for those who decided that I wasn't the best candidate to become the next mayor. It's not like you hear people walking around saying, F you, Sliwa, what a lousy campaign. You know, if anything, I think I built more credibility, more credence into the kind of philosophy that I have, which is not a hardcore ideology that is generally represented in either the Republican sectors or the Democratic sectors. I even said that, wait a second, Andrew Yang, who was called a racist, if you remember, by by Eric Adams, was called a charlatan, a snake oil salesman, was promoting universal basic income. I said, let's take a look at it. What are we afraid of? Let's experiment with it. Milton Friedman, who is considered the godfather of modern American capitalism, you know, supply-side economics that Reagan used, he said this might be a good idea years and years ago. We're never going to know unless we experiment with it. But, oh, everybody who's locked in their box say, oh, you can't do that. That's socialism. That's communism. And I said, wait a second. How do you know what's going to amount from it unless you don't test it out? New York City would be the perfect place to do that in order, from my point of view, to destroy this bureaucracy. 30 different agencies that deal with social services. Most of the money that comes from our tax dollars that go to social services ends up getting sucked into this vortex of these huge bureaucracies. UBI might be one way of eliminating that.
In terms of, you mentioned the law and order flavor that this year had and that the voters seemed very receptive to. It's funny, I remember an interview you did with Barry Farber about 12, 13 years ago where Barry talked about his run for mayor in 1977. And he said, you know, at the outset, we could smell conservatism was in the air, but Barry explained to you that that conservatism manifested itself in Ed Koch winning the Democratic primary in sort of a tough on crime style agenda. Adams sort of could be said to be reading from the same playbook. Do you think if the Democrats had nominated somebody that wasn't at least rhetorically a tough on crime candidate, somebody like a Maya Wiley, for instance, or a Sean Donovan, do you think the election might have turned out differently?
Oh, that would have been a dream come true. Come on, Frank. That would have been Curtis Weaver versus AOC, all out crazy, Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, the Democratic Socialists of America, the Justice Warriors. Of course, that would have been much better in terms of my interests of becoming the mayor of the city of New York and putting my agenda into place. It would have clearly shown the electorate two totally different ideologies, and then they would have had an opportunity to pick from it.
A listener emailed in. He said that he could tell the kind of access that you gave in your interview with the Jewish Press Weekly, in which you were painted in a pretty fairly positive way. Were you disappointed that the editorial page of the Jewish Press went with your opponent, Eric Adams? And I think the same could be said of the Daily News and the Staten Island Advance. You spent a lot of time with reporters from all those publications. They wrote pretty nice things about you and then ultimately endorsed Adams. Any feelings about how the newspaper endorsements played out?
Well, let's take the Staten Island Advance as an example. I sat with the editorial board. We had a very long discussion on a wide variety of issues that affect Staten Island. And if you remember, they said, oh, Curtis Lewa knows more about Staten Island than any candidate running for office, including the three that are running for borough president of Staten Island. But we're not endorsing him. We're endorsing Eric Adams. And I'm like, wait a second. First off, I don't know more than the three candidates who were running for borough president of Staten Island. That's incorrect. But I certainly knew more about Staten Island than Eric Adams. That was obvious to all. But to make that statement and then to rule me out of the deck, especially when Staten Island in the last 8 years has gotten little if any attention, to the point where Councilman Joe Borelli was talking secession again, which I supported. I mean, it just goes to show you that you can come to a certain conclusion, but you're not going to buck the trend. You're not going to buck the flow, the coronation, the insulation of Eric Adams as mayor before the actual general campaign even began. Frank, this has never happened in the history of politics where someone has been anointed the mayor, even though they've been easy. Look, Joe Loder got whooped by Bill de Blasio. You never read anything like that. I beat Joe Loder. You never read that when Ed Koch was running against, McKechnie's wife, remember? Nobody ever said, oh, it's a fait accompli, it's a slam dunk, it's Mayor Ed Koch again. This was so unfair in terms of the way the media presented it to the general public. And then remember,
I defeated all odds in terms of how well I would do, especially, as you mentioned, in the Asian community, in the Latino community. These are areas where Republicans previously had not done all that well.
All right, Curtis, a lot of people in this audience and around the city, millions of people, actually, they and actually maybe even around the country, because I know you had donors around the country. They're all itching to see you run for office again. There's certainly a lot of options. There's a governor's race next year, mayor's races in 4 years. What have you been thinking in terms of a potential political comeback, Curtis?
Well, there's no doubt that the message that I gave in this mayoral run was favorably received and that there are options. I think, first off, you have to say to yourself, what direction is the Republican Party going to go locally? And you say to yourself, well, with Curtis at the top of the ticket, he was able to help a lot of the candidates who were further down the line in terms of getting city council options, which previously hadn't existed. And I'm creating a movement that goes in a different direction than your typical Republican Party or a typical Republican Party candidates. And I'm going to morph some of these issues into that mission that previously weren't even being discussed by Democrats, never mind Republicans, and chart out a way of getting more people involved in the process, like Asians, like Latinos and Latinas, like African Americans, like West Indians, Caribbeans. Those people who have always been on the periphery, but have never been considered the mainstream of the Republican Party almost anywhere in the country. And I think I have the ability to change all of that because of my relationships in these communities that predate anything political. It all relates to the Guardian Angels and bringing patrols into communities when they were under duress and stress and helping them help themselves. For instance, when all these attacks against Asians began occurring at the time of the lockdown and the pandemic almost 2 years ago, we were the only people organizing patrols to protect Asians with mostly Asian recruits. That was well received in Flushing, in Sunset Park, in Chinatown, in Woodside, Queens, in these growing, growing Asian communities, which now are 16% of the population and growing as we speak. So I think there's a correlation here. You can't just show up and say, well, our values are your values, and then expect to get them to vote for you. You have to be ingrained in these communities. You have to have a legacy in these communities, or the Democrats are just going to sew it up, and all you're going to end up is with white votes, mostly white ethnic votes, of which they're either leaving to Florida as part of the exodus, or unfortunately, they're dead and buried, and they're no longer on this claim.
Curtis, a lot of folks obviously know you best being a radio talk show host. You've been a staple of the WABC lineup since the early 1990s. And I mentioned this yesterday. This Sunday, you are making your return to the WABC fold. What's the story? What's your schedule? Let's start with this weekend, for instance.
Well, John Katsimatidis, owner-operator, and I have had a great relationship through the years. In fact, we coined the expression theater of the mind because we love talk radio, especially in the overnight hours, the hours that you dominate in now, Frank Morano. You know me going way back for a period of time. I did overnight radio for a period of time. WABC, the acronym meant always broadcasting Curtis in all different time slots, either by myself or with partners. I've done it all. So, yes, I'm returning this Sunday. Hour number one will be at 3 p.m., and it'll be a battle with the infamous Christopher Hahn.
Oh, boy.
Who is the punching boy on the Fox News channel as their sort of liberal.
The aggressive progressive, they call him, right?
Oh, progressive, right. A guy who used to be an aide, one of the chief aides of the schmuck to putz, Chuck E. Cheese Schumer, who I loathe, I hate, I despise. So this is going to be, in the words of Barry Farber that you used before, like two scorpions in a brandy glass for about an hour, 3 to 4. Then I go solo from 4 to 5 because I know a lot of people, you know, they're armchair consultants. They're going to want to tell me all the things I should have done, which would have enabled me to be the mayor of the city of New York.
I'm hearing them. They're calling me. I tell him the same thing. I said, Curtis barely listened to me. He's not going to listen to you. So 3-4 with Chris Hahn, the aggressive progressive. 4-5 solo. And what is that about it? You know, they calling
no,
it a day after
no,
that?
No, no. No, then John Katsimatidis is on. And then more of the shows. And then I'm on again. I come back so nice. I do it twice from 10 p.m. that night to 1 a.m. in the morning.
Ah, leading into me on Monday morning.
Right, I'll have a full 3 hours, and I'll be discussing all the different issues that have been of great impact. As you know, the infrastructure vote that has affected both Nicole Malliotakis and Barbarino out there in Long Island, who replaced Peter King.
Right, yeah, it's actually Garbarino. Barbarino was John Travolta in Welcome Back, Kotter.
Well, he reminds me of John Travolta because he no longer has hair on his head, just like John Travolta. But they're catching hell, and I'm going to do the deep dive into that and so much else. And again, it's going to be entertaining. A lot of phone calls, because that's what I believe in. You know, interaction with the people. They haven't heard from me directly for a while, except in paid advertisements or if they happen to be in the same place, same time as me during the campaign. But we're definitely getting back into the groove of talk radio, which, as you know, if you cut my veins and arteries, I bleed talk radio.
Now, what about long term, Curtis? A lot of people assume you're going to be back on the station regularly in some capacity. Are you going to stick with Sundays for the time being, or are you prepared to announce any other lineup changes about maybe your time during the week? Curtis?
Yes, Frank. I momentarily dozed off on you. You were putting me to sleep, Frank. My God, Frank. Could you be a little more excited? Could you be a little bit more emphatic here? It seems like, oh, here's Curtis Lee with WRDC, 30 years of talk radio. Frank, the cognoscentes of baseball. If you're of my era, you say, oh, I'm going to be like Gil McDougall. That means I wear a glove and I can play any position and I can fill in at any time and any place. So think of me as the Swiss cheese man. I will be the fill-in guy for any openings as long as they occur.
All right. Well, you certainly do know a thing or two, maybe about both putting people to sleep and going to sleep. This is actually a recording of you snoring from 11 years ago, and I can assure you, my commentary or lack of enthusiasm about hearing 5 hours of Sleewisms in one day had nothing to do with putting you to sleep on this particular occasion. So I guarantee you the 10.2 share in the most recent ratings reflects a lot of awake listeners as well, Curtis. Now,
no, there's no doubt you're doing an outstanding job going back to the era of Art Bell, that Looney Kazooney from Parts Unknown. Or as I grew up with Long John Neville and Candy Jones at what was the big talker at the time, WMCA. I love overnight radio. And who can forget our friend, we mourn his loss every day, Alan B. Combs, one of the great, great talk radio hosts of all time who understood overnight radio was theater of the mind.
100%. Absolutely. Alan was the greatest. And I've mentioned his time on WEVD before. And for a time, you actually competed with him when you were both on 10 p.m. to 1 a.m. Perhaps that's why he's no longer with us. But, Curtis, let me ask you about an interaction that you had a couple of months ago during the campaign with Hawk Newsom, who claims to be the leader of Black Lives Matter for the greater New York City area. Listen to this.
He's got something to say. Talk. Talk, Curtis. Talk. You always got something to say. Say it now. Tell me you want to refund the police. What about f***ing education? You do your f***ing homework, Curtis? Huh? You understand with neighborhoods with the highest unemployment rate have the highest rates of crime. NYPD operates with $11 to $20 billion. If money was the answer, there'd be no crime in New York. But you know that. But rather than help black people and invest in communities, you'd rather play politics.
That person, Curtis, is now essentially threatening to burn down the city. He met with Eric Adams, not happy with what he's hearing from Adams in terms of bringing black plainclothes police officers. And he's saying that if that happens, then there's going to be bloodshed. Those are his words, and riots. What's your reaction to what Hawk Newsom is doing right now?
Well, first off, I give Eric Adams all of my support on this in restoring the anti-crime unit and standing up to Hawk Newsom and any of the other radicals and bomb throwers out there. First off, you got to understand Hawk Newsom like I do. This guy is a character. He rolls around Yankee Stadium. He lives in that area. He's a real mamalouk, lives at home with his mother, and has a Cadillac Escalade, almost brand new. Do you know what that retails for, Frank?
I'm guessing $80,000, $70,000. Can't imagine.
Yeah, $85,000 or $100,000, depending on all the accessories that you have on there. And he has a bullhorn with him all the time. So if he sees something that he wants to get involved with, he pulls the bullhorn out, goes running out, and starts cursing at you. And the interesting thing, and maybe you can probe this, is when he was following me around Yankee Stadium, it was actually the first Subway Series game involving the Yanks and Mets at Yankee Stadium. He was following me around, trying to turn people against me. That didn't work. Screaming invectives. He kept mentioning how he's been in the box with Randy Levine, the president of the New York Yankees, which I didn't pay no mind to. I figured, you know, he's just boasting. Well, in that sit-down he had with Eric Adams at Brooklyn Borough Hall, he mentioned how he has a partnership with the Yankees and Randy Levine.
Wow.
Now, he may just be spewing a lot of hot air, which is what he generally does. But somebody really has to start checking into that. Frank, I'd like to tag team up with you on that, because can you imagine if the Yankees through Randy Levine have any kind of relationship with Hawk Newsom and Black Lives Matter, at least the New York division?
Well, that would be pretty wild, although not entirely surprising if that's the case. Now, a couple of people in the Facebook group who are big supporters of yours, and if people want to join the Facebook group, they can just search on Facebook, Marano Radio Fans and Haters. They have been asserting periodically throughout the campaign that our owner, John Catsimatidis, was not sufficiently supportive of your candidacy. Do you care to confirm or deny that for the record once and for all?
Well, Frank, you know this. I could never have run for the mayor of the city of New York without the support, the aid, and the advice of John Catsimatidis and his wife, Margo Catsimatidis. They gave me the opportunity to get out of my contract at WABC and run. When John determined he was not going to run this time, he basically turned to me and said, Curtis, if you're interested in running, the field is yours. At that time, there were two candidates, Sarah Tershwell, who Fernando Mateo and his allies knocked off the ballot. That was one of the more vicious things that happened in this campaign. Republicans knocking off Republicans on the ballot. Didn't happen. Democrats didn't do that to one another, only Republicans. So you scratch your head and you wonder. But John gave me tactical air support, gave me the opportunity to run. And remember, John Catsimatidis has supported people of all different political backgrounds, Republicans and Democrats always. So the fact that he was friendly to Eric Adams, he's known Eric Adams through the years. He's friendly with a lot of people in New York City. So you don't necessarily have to take a position. Look, when Donald Trump Citizen was running for the presidency and he was questioned, gee, how come you donated to Democrats? How come you donated to Republicans? Trump said, I donate to them all. So this way, when I call them up, they answer my phone call. And I think that's one of the reasons that you donate money to people, is you want to have at least an opportunity to engage them in dialogue when it has to do with issues that are close to your needs or the needs of the city.
Talking with Curtis Sliwa, you can hear him this Sunday from 3 to 4 p.m. with Chris Hahn, the aggressive progressive, from 4 to 5 solo, and then from 10 p.m. to 1 a.m. right before this program. Curtis, we're all going to listen Sunday, but give us a preview. You mentioned the infrastructure package. These 13 Republicans that voted for it, they're all getting a lot of heat. Do you think that heat is warranted?
Well, number one, people are getting all mixed up there are two separate bills. Two separate bills. The one bill that's coming down the pipe now is the one that is the most troublesome, because it basically would change the social services of the way we deal with people throughout America. The infrastructure bill has its problems, but we need infrastructure. I mean, we got a tunnel falling apart between New Jersey and New York that connects right into Penn Station. That's ready to go at any moment. We need a replacement. We need more infrastructure around the country. That was one of the things that President Donald Trump spoke about, except he wasn't able to get a coalition together that was able to push through legislation to do that. But that was one of the few bipartisan issues in a very divided House mm-hmm. and a very divided Senate. So I think it's really, really wrong for people to start attacking Maliotakis and Barbarino out there, who replaced Peter King.
Right, Garbarino.
Claiming that they're somehow traitors or rhino Republicans or all that.
Well, no, I'm with you on that one, Curtis. All right. We'll be tuning in 3 o'clock, 4 o'clock, 10 p.m. on Sunday. And who knows, you may hear some more of Curtis Sliwa in the overnight hours in the near future. Curtis, by the way, if people do want to see Curtis and me, I'm actually going to be on hand for this as well. Curtis is going to be appearing at the ribbon cutting of a place on Highland Boulevard, which is going to be pretty interesting. And in fact, a former WABC intern is doing it. And it is going to be, if people want to come, at, 4001 Highland Boulevard in Great Hills, 4001 Highland Boulevard. And it's so nice to see a business opening rather than closing. So you can see Curtis, you can see me, get your picture taken, and hopefully we'll have some nice weather. Curtis, I will see you tomorrow.
Frank, yes. Isn't that when I'm going to be coronated mayor of Staten Island since I got 67% of the vote?
If only they seceded. If only they seceded, forget about it. You'd be measuring the drapes in St. George Hall right now.
Oh, St. George Hall. Oh, please, please, please make it possible. Make it possible.
But Curtis, you don't want Staten Island to secede.
At Fort Wadsworth. Let me fire the cannon.
You don't want Staten Island to secede, because if you ever run for mayor again, you'd have no chance if Staten Island secedes.
Oh, that's right.
Yeah.
Let me reconfigurate that.
Yeah. Give that some thought.
Sit down.
Back to the drawing board.
Have to sit down on Saturday and figure this out.
Wonderful.
Right?
All right. Okay. I will see you tomorrow, 2:30, 4001 Highland Boulevard, Sunday afternoon, 3 p.m., 4 p.m., Sunday night, 10 p.m. Curtis, thanks for being awake.
I'm back. I'm back.
All right. Now you can go back to stealing all of my bits and my content and repurposing it as your own now that you're back on the radio.
I want to be a success, Frank, not a failure.
I'll see you, my friend. If you want to comment on any portion of my discussion with Curtis Sliwa, give me a call, 1-800-848-9222. That's 1-800-848-WABC. Now, Legacy Precious Metals is the company that you should think about using if you're considering adding a little bit of gold to your portfolio. You know, they say, the golden rule, he who has the gold makes the rules. Well, you can have gold if you reach out to Legacy Precious Metals. Inflation is skyrocketing. Gold and precious metals are offering a hedge against inflation. You know, John Catsimatidis, who we were talking about a minute ago, he doesn't even like to use the word inflation. He likes to boil it down in simple terms for people. Things just cost more. That's certainly true. If you have an existing retirement account, think about rolling it in to a gold or a silver IRA. And if you do that, do it with Legacy Precious Metals. Gold should be a part of your portfolio. It's a part of mine. Give them a call, 866-932-0635. That's 866-932-0635. Or go visit them online at legacypminvestments.com. That's legacypminvestments.com. And if you do so, make sure you select the option Frank Morano when you tell them where you heard about it. legacypminvestments.com.
77 WABC.
This is The Other Side of Midnight with Frank Morano, 77 WABC.
There go
never tell. The movie's gonna make me a big star.
John Lennon, act naturally. Hey, a fascinating story in Time magazine. I'm going to take your calls in just a minute. Earth has a second moon for another 300 years at least. That is the headline. It's easy to be brand loyal to the moon. We've only got the one. After all, unlike Jupiter and Saturn, where you'd have dozens to choose from, here it's Luna or nada, or not. The fact is there's another sort of kind of moon in a sort of kind of orbit around Earth that was discovered only in 2016. And according to a new study in Nature, we may at last know how it was formed. This quasi-moon, named Kamaoliwa, after a Hawaiian word that refers to a moving celestial object, it's not much to speak of. It's pretty small. It circles the Earth in a repeating corkscrew-like trajectory that brings it no closer than 40 to 100 times the distance of our more familiar moon. But its odd flight path is caused by the competing gravitational pulls of the Earth and the Sun, which continually bend and torque the moonlet's motion, preventing it from achieving a more conventional orbit. So this is interesting. Dr. Sky, Steve Cates, is going to join us next Friday, a week from today, at 2 a.m., because he's doing something really cool. He's doing a live, while the lunar eclipse is going on, he's going to be on the radio with us narrating it. So you can look outside, watch the lunar eclipse, keep your radio on, and hear us talking about what's going on and hear him explaining exactly what's going to be happening. So that's next Friday in the 2 o'clock hour. But I'm going to ask him about the second moon as well. And then a fascinating story. The Sun, the U.S. Sun has the article, Drudge linked to it, about, you know, Elon Musk from SpaceX insists that he's going to move to Mars. And he believes that humans need to colonize Mars in order to become a multi-planet species. And according to this article in The Sun, I'm going to link to it on my Facebook page, which I hope you will follow. The Facebook address is facebook.com/MoranoFan. That's facebook.com/MoranoFan. According to this article in The Sun, children born on Mars after these SpaceX missions would have brittle bones, weak eyesight, and a green skin tone. And they would look like Martians. And I guess they would be Martians if they're born on Mars. Maybe there's a reason Martians look like this. So you could check out what this, they have a simulation of what a Martian-born child would look like. And you can read the article all about Elon Musk and the difficulties that might involve colonizing Mars. 800-848-WABC. Patrick in the Bronx has been patiently holding. Hello, Patrick.
Yeah, hi. Two things. It's ridiculous that in 2021, prostitution is still illegal. Prostitution is necessary. I know this special needs guy who, on his 40th birthday, his two brothers paid a call girl to have sex with him for the first time in his life.
Wow.
Should he be arrested?
I don't think so. I'm with you, Patrick. By the way, Act Naturally, that song, that was not John Lennon. I misspoke. That was Ringo Starr. Apologies. Ringo Starr taking the lead vocals. Doing a fine job with it there. I'm a big Ringo fan. All right. Until next hour, remember, your influence counts. So use it.
This is The Other Side of Midnight with Frank Morano.
They're running a strange program, y'all.
Talk Radio 77 WABC. Now, here's Frank Morano.
I'm not tired yet. I'm
everybody. This is The Other Side of Midnight. I'm Frank Moreno. No more guests for the rest of the show, unless Juliet pops in. We'll ask her what's on her mind as she prepares for the WABC early news, which you can hear starting at 5 a.m. The $1,000 Minute coming up at 4:30. If you want to try and answer 10 questions in 60 seconds. You know, I never played. I'm a football fan. I always have been. But I never played football in high school. I never really played any organized football. My father never encouraged me to play football. I was very into baseball, played baseball for many years. And even when I was a younger person, I played soccer. I played football informally in the street, but I never played it in a league because, you know, there was some concern about, even back then, about serious injuries and so forth. So I don't know what it's like to play football for a high school team. However, I had a lot of friends that played football for their high school teams, and I have a lot of friends that have coached high school football. And I found this story really interesting and pretty disgusting. A New Jersey high school, Wall High School, canceled its upcoming playoff game on Wednesday over hazing abuse allegations that surfaced earlier in the week. So Wall High School was set to take on Delsey in the NJSIAA South Group 3 playoffs, but now they're going to miss an opportunity to compete for a spot in the championship. Wall was hit with hazing allegations earlier in the week. According to the Asbury Park Press, police launched an investigation into hazing abuse allegedly involving members of the football team. A letter from Wall Township Superintendent of Schools Tracy Handerhan revealed the decision to cancel the game in a letter to the Wall Township Public School Community. Because of this pending investigation and after consultation with board counsel, administration, and the office of the Monmouth County Interim Executive County Superintendent, the football game this Friday, November 12th, is canceled. The NJSIAA, the governing body of high school athletics in New Jersey, said Delsey would move the championship game. Police have yet to reveal the details behind the allegations. NJ Advanced Media, that's the company that owns the Star Ledger and the like, reported that one of the incidents, which was reportedly recorded, involved six players allegedly trying to pin down another player while there were screams to stop. Parents told the paper that the alleged incident involved a mop or broomstick. Parents said the video doesn't show sodomy, but believe that may have been the attempt. Upon becoming aware of the allegation, we immediately contacted the appropriate authorities. Here's a pending investigation, and the school district is cooperating fully. We can't comment further on a pending investigation of a student matter. That's what the president of the Board of Education said. So just a few miles up the Garden State Parkway, Sayreville War Memorial High School dealt with a hazing abuse scandal in 2014 and 2016. That incident led to the cancellation of a season, the resignation of the athletic director, and the coach transferring to the elementary school, and the suspension and criminal charges of seven players involved. One case was settled, but six others received probation and community service for crimes that range from hazing to simple assault. Now, I recognize that in a football-like environment, a locker room-like environment, there's always going to be a little hazing. I imagine the older players are always going to give the younger players a little bit of a hard time. But once it's 6-on-1 and people are screaming out in pain, and when you're using a mop or a broomstick to either assault or sodomize somebody, I mean, this is really reprehensible. I don't think that just resigning this one. Now, what's potentially even more disturbing about this is, again, parents who saw the video of the attack, they told NJ.com the victim can be heard pleading for help. And apparently they think there was an attempt to maybe conceal this and not get it out there and not, you know, deal with it, this as it should have been dealt with, because there was concern about missing this playoff game. But the word spread among the students who knew members of the football team, and they're saying that not every player was involved. It's just these six players. So on the one hand, I am curious, specifically if you have experience coaching in a youth football setting or even playing in a youth football setting, what do you think can be done to reduce these hazing incidents so that they don't become crimes? I mean, you give somebody a rough elbow now and then, okay. Shove somebody to the ground, fine. I mean, if you have to. A little bit of an aggressive tackle, maybe. You know, when I was in high school and I'd be involved in sports, sometimes there were a couple of players that I would give a little bit of an extra hard time to. You know, okay. Never in my life would I ever partner with five other people to beat someone with a broomstick or sodomize them with it. So, one, I'm curious what you think can be done to mitigate future severe hazing incidents like this. 800-848-WABC. Aside from the players involved, obviously we need to know more about the case, but aside from the players involved, what do you think should be done about the coaching staff and anybody that was aware of what was going on here? 1-800-848-9222, 1-800-848-WABC. And lastly, is there something about the youth sports culture in general and maybe the youth football culture specifically that brings out this sort of behavior in players? Are we training them? You know, I remember during the tailhook incident, there were a lot of people that were defending the conduct of the people involved in the tailhook incident. And they were saying, well, look, if you train killers, this is what's going to happen if you throw some females in there. You know, I'm wondering if maybe the coaching and the training has become so aggressive that we're training these, you know, these bloodthirsty mini warriors, that maybe it's inevitable that this kind of behavior happens. Tell me what you think. 800-848-9222. That's 1-800-848-WABC. You can also find me on Twitter at Frank Morano. You can also reach me via email, frank.morano@wabcradio.com. If you're on Facebook, I encourage you to join the Facebook group. You can just go online to Morano Radio Fans and Haters. And just search that on Facebook, Morano Radio Fans and Haters. And right now people are talking about Curtis. People are talking about whether or not prostitution should be legal. People are talking about the WABC app and a whole bunch of other things as well. So if you want to weigh in on anything that we've covered on the show, but you don't feel like calling in, that's the place to do it. The Facebook forum, Morano Radio Fans and Haters. And coming up at 5, you can hear Juliette Huddy and me to bring you the news that you'll want to hear for the rest of the weekend. Anthony is in West Babylon. Hello there, Anthony.
Hey, how you doing?
Good. How are you?
I'm living the dream, heading to work.
Love to hear that. What line of work are you in, Anthony? Yeah.
I do construction.
Great. Okay. Well, tell me what you think about this.
Okay. So, you know, same as you, I played high school sports, and there's always goofing around, always something going on, you know. Maybe not to the extent of what we're talking about here. You know, I never witnessed anything like that. But, you know, absolutely, you know, some tomfoolery. But the only thing I always thought whenever I heard these cases going on is that, say there's 30 kids on that team, 6 kids, you know, are depriving the rest of that team to go play. And I really don't think it's fair that, you know, these other kids are going to lose an evening of a great night in some playoff game because these other 6 kids ruined it.
I hear you. Now, what if, now that's sort of my view as well, but what if the coaching staff also played a role in concealing this behavior and not immediately cooperating with authorities?
Well, listen, they got to pay the price as well. You're right. And then you're going to tell me that, well, then there's no one to coach the team. There's a JV coach. There's a freshman coach. There's always somebody looking to step up and make a name for themselves.
All right. So your reaction is that this playoff game shouldn't have been canceled. If they had to suspend the six players and maybe even the coach, they had to, you know, then that's what they should have done.
Absolutely. That's the way I believe. I'm sure there's some kids that weren't even in that locker room or wherever this had happened. And they're saying to themselves, well, I didn't do anything. What am I getting slammed for?
Well, that's a fair point, Anthony. Thank you very much. 1-800-848-WABC if you want to weigh in. Five other open lines. So if you want to get in, now's the time. 800-848-9222. Bob is in Long Beach. Hello, Bob.
Hello, Frank. Look, well, here's the thing I was thinking about. You were saying before with the fellow, he rolled the truck over on himself. He crushed himself.
Yeah, that we were talking about these aggressive TikTok stunts that are taking their toll.
Yeah, but I understand. It's got to be because he's dim. Because you got to know that the truck is going to crush you. And another thing, my daughter was 4 years old. She's 38 now. But we were in Prospect Park Zoo, right? And the week before, a kid went swimming in the polar bear pool. The kid was 16 years old. What do you think the polar bear did?
Well, did he bite him?
He ate him. Ate him.
Wow.
And the police came, and what did the police do?
They arrested the polar bear.
They shoot him, the polar bear.
They really shot the polar bear?
Dead.
You're kidding.
And they had to dig the kid out of the polar bear because he ate the kid. My daughter told it to me, 3.5 years old. You know what she told me? Daddy, why did that boy go swimming in the polar bear pool? The polar bear's going to eat him. Now, can I ask you a question? How could a 3-year-old figure that out and a 16-year-old don't know? A polar bear is the most vicious creature, will eat you. Just even if he's not hungry, he'll eat you.
Well, that is, I can't argue with that. You're exactly right. Look, I mean, I think that's exactly the problem. The problem is that people are being pressured or feel they're pressured to do more and more aggressive stunts, even though these stunts are dangerous, just for the sake of getting likes on TikTok. I think that's exactly the problem, Bob.
But it's not dangerous. It's a matter of stupidity.
Agreed.
If you go swimming in a polar bear's private swimming pool at Prospect Park, what is the next step? I mean, I don't, you know, Frank, I'll see. I just wanted to tell you that.
Yeah, well, hey, fair point. Thank you very, very much. Thank you. By the way, I do want to remind you that if you ever find yourself with a dead polar bear, however that polar bear died, it's your business. I don't want to know about it. But however that polar bear died, the one thing that you do not want to do is eat that polar bear's liver, because polar bears have so much vitamin A in their liver, and vitamin A is not a water-soluble vitamin, so it stays with you. And if you eat a polar bear liver, you will actually die of sort of a polar, because that vitamin A is just too much for your body. You probably won't survive. So if you eat a polar bear, stay away from the liver. So they accumulate lots of vitamin A, and like virtually any substance, vitamin A can be toxic in high doses. 800-848-9222. Glenn in Queens, you have a thought on this football hazing incident?
Yeah, well, they, like I said to you, the call screener, you win together as a team, you lose together as a team. And when you have teammates or coaches that do something foolish, that the team may be disqualified or anything like that, then unfortunately that's the way it has to be. Because if not, you'll have shenanigans all the time. So it's not like it was one player.
Well, I tend to agree with you. If you're talking one or two players, you suspend them. But if it is six players that participated in this assault and the coach concealed the incident from the authorities, then I think that forfeiting this playoff game is the least possible penalty they can deal with.
And if he and six players did it and he knew about it, that means the other guys had an inkling of it. Maybe they weren't there, but the word gets around.
Yep.
The other thing I wanted to say about that crackpot making the Black Lives Matter comments that blood is going to run through the streets and everything, I don't understand why that man has not been arrested, okay, for making threatening comments against the people, against the property, against the city, and against the mayor-elect. How come, if it would have been, I'm sure, somebody else, a Caucasian person that would have said that against the black, and we're going to do this to you, those people would have been put up in Rikers Island the very same
way. That's a good point. It's a good point, Glenn. Thank you. 800-848-WABC. Pete is on Staten Island. Hello, Pete.
Good morning, Frank. Yeah, you know what you said about the football. I was a JV player playing for New Dorp High School back in the 70s, and I never liked the shower because, if we won the game, it was one thing. If we lost, it was a little tension and stuff. And they used to have a coach who used to stay in the shower. His name was Paul Milzer. I used to watch out for you, but I used to tell them I got a bad fungus infection. I got athlete foot, so they would excuse me from shower. Now, I was intimidated. I was a freshman playing with seniors, you know. So
sure.
Naturally, if I lost, if I didn't play right, I paid for it, you know. Always, there was, you know, a hassle, you know, like you said, hazing and stuff like that. But it was minor. It was all in fun. No major thing.
All right. Well, so what do you think can be done, if anything, to change the culture in some of these locker rooms?
I can't really give you an answer on that. It was just like part of the conglomerate, you know, what was going on with everything. It wasn't, you know, I did more stuff when I was a chief squire of Knights of Columbus with the initiating team. We'd put eggs in people's mouth and broke them. I mean, if I get a little shell in my egg, I have a conniption.
Well, Pete, I mean, look, and thank you for the call, Pete. If you have an answer, give us a call, 800-848-9222. There is a big difference between youthful hijinks and assaulting people. I mean, there's shenanigans, and then there's brutality. There's joking around, and then there's seriously damaging someone, either physically or in some other way. 800-848-WABC. That's 800-848-9222. Mike is in New Hyde Park. Hello, Mike.
You know, in terms of TikTok, Frank, I bought a new cell phone about a year ago.
And congratulations.
I deleted it immediately. TikTok is Chinese, and this is a broad stroke analysis, so take it with a grain of salt. But as a nation, they are our number one enemy, and they're a godless nation. So no good can come of TikTok. I despise it.
Well, look, I'm not on TikTok either, Mike, so I can't comment on that, Mike. But if it wasn't happening on TikTok, I think a lot of this similar desperation for attention and adoration from adoring fans who you've never met would drive some of these young people to do some of this other stuff on Instagram or Facebook or whatever, Meerkat, some other social media app that's there, or YouTube. John is calling from upstate New York. Hello, John.
Hey, how you doing, Frankie?
Doing well.
It's a crazy story. In high school football, after the game, we would have to, like, additionate the quarterback. So we bend them over, Ben Gay in the ass.
Really?
Oh, absolutely.
Well, see, and what's to be gained from something like that, John?
Just the look on his face.
Mm.
It's, see, like, indescribable. And then I got to ask you one more question, Frank.
Sure.
Why is there a shortage of turkeys?
You know, John, I don't know. I have to be honest. I think it might be part of this whole supply chain shortage situation, but I can't tell. I can't speak to turkey specifically. I know meat products have gone up, every type of meat, pretty much, and I think it's partly due to inflation, partly due to the supply chain shortage. But as far as why there's fewer turkeys as opposed to chickens or Cornish hens, that I can't answer. I have no idea. Hey, we'll do the $1,000 minute next. If you want to try and win $1,000. Answer 10 questions in 60 seconds. All you have to do is be the seventh caller to 1-800-848-9222, and you'll have your opportunity to try and win $1,000 by, as I said, answering 10 questions within 60 seconds. You get one wrong, you lose. It takes you longer than 60 seconds to answer, then you lose. But if you have what it takes, be the seventh caller to 800-848-9222 right now. Body heat. It's going to be a weird weather day today. Be careful. In fact, we may see how the weird weather is affecting the traffic by going to Joe Nolan a little earlier than usual because there's wind out there. As I was driving in last night, that wind on the Verrazano Narrows Bridge was rough. And apparently this morning there's going to be some wind and some rain. Hopefully it all clears up by later this afternoon and early tonight. And then we'll see what the rest of the weekend has in store. Meantime, it is time for
The Other Side of Midnight presents
It's the $1,000 Minute. Answer 10 questions correctly in 1 minute, and you could win $1,000. Here's your host, Frank Morano.
And let's meet today's contestant, Rick, in Seaside Park, New Jersey. Good morning, Rick.
Good morning, Frank. How are you?
I'm well, Rick. Rick, are you familiar with the contest?
Yes, I am, and I love your show.
Oh, that's nice of you. Thank you. So basically, we're going to go through these questions. If you get a question right, I'm going to just move on to the next one so that we can try and run through these in a minute. If you get a question wrong, you'll hear the buzzer. And then the timer will begin after I ask the first question. You ready to go?
Yes, I am.
All right. Let's do it, Rick. How many tongues do you have?
One.
Name one of New York's two baseball teams.
New York Yankees.
What sweet substance do honeybees make?
Honey.
Who did I support in the recent election for mayor of New York City?
The man, Curtis Sliwa.
What actor played Tony Soprano on The Sopranos?
Gandolfi?
We'll give you that. It's Gandolfini. We'll give you that. Who is the Chief Justice of the United States?
Oh. I don't know.
All right. It's John Roberts. For better or worse, it's John Roberts, the Chief Justice, a Bush appointee. He's been there for 16 years now, but sometimes it's tough to keep track of those Supreme Court justices because there's no cameras. They don't get, they don't get seen as much. Rick, thank you for playing. If you want the Other Side of Midnight cap, we're going to send you one for free. I'm going to put you on hold, and Matt will get your information, okay?
Thank you, sir.
Thanks for listening, and thanks for playing. Appreciate it.
Thanks.
All right. Thank you very much. We'll do it again on Monday if you didn't get an opportunity to. Oh, did I hang up on him? Sorry. If I hung up wrong, Rick, if I hung up on you, call back. I might have hit drop instead of hold. So if you want a cap, call back and give Matt your information at 800-848-9222. And there's five open lines now, so you'll be able to get right through to Matt, and he'll get your information. Now, we'll take your calls on other subjects in just a minute, 800-848-9222. But it's also time for the 77 WABC Clip of the Day. This time, as it comes to us from the Rita Cosby Show.
John, what did you make of President Biden? He's like, well, I know they were talking about it for so many years, but I'm basically doing it. I'm the white knight.
Well, listen, it's exactly what Joe Biden has done for the last two or three years, starting from his basement campaign until today. And that is blame other people for the problems, take credit for things that he probably doesn't have much to do with. But I think the single most important thing he said today, for the first time, he acknowledged his COVID stimulus package is the reason why we saw the historic inflation on a 0.9% in a single month jump, 6.2 annualized in October, the worst in 31 years. And Joe Biden said, you know what? Yeah, it's because we put more people into money's pocket. And that's the first time he's been willing to acknowledge that his COVID policies are the reason why we have soaring inflation.
That was John Solomon, formerly of The Hill, formerly of Fox News. Now he's with his own website called justthenews.com. He's a regular contributor to this radio station. He's a regular guest on the Cats at Night show, and certainly a very, very interesting guy. Very interesting guy, and that was Rita Cosby's interview with him. You can hear Rita Cosby every night from 10 p.m. to midnight. And yesterday, she did a terrific show on Veterans Day. If you didn't get a chance to hear it, I'd encourage you to go back and listen to the podcast. That interview that she did in the second hour, where she talked to that 90-something-year-old World War II veteran. I mean, wow. And then right after the Hawk Newsom discussion, I mean, you talk about a real dichotomy in character. They were on display in that hour, so you can go back and listen to the podcast from Rita Cosby. What was interesting to me about what John Solomon was saying there is he's telling the same story that everybody else is telling, and he is concerned about the same thing that everybody is concerned with. Democrat, Republican, independent, young, old, inflation. Inflation, inflation, inflation. Now, if we recognize that inflation is here, number one, that it could be getting worse and it could be with us for a while, number two, what do we do about it? Well, here's what you can do about it, and for your own financial well-being, to look after yourself and your family. Gold. Gold, silver, and precious metals. Gold is a hedge against inflation. Gold is a great way to protect against inflation, and it protects you and your retirement. The less the dollar is worth, the more gold is worth. The worse inflation gets, the more gold is worth. So if you have an existing retirement account, whether it be a 401k or a traditional IRA or a Roth IRA, whatever the case may be, roll it into a gold or a silver IRA, and you should do it with Legacy Precious Metals. If gold should certainly be a part of your portfolio, it's part of mine. And Legacy is the company that you can trust because they give you unbiased information based on your individual situation. Contact Legacy Precious Metals today. You can call them 866-932-0635. That's 866-932-0635. Or you can go to the website LegacyPMInvestments.com. That's LegacyPMInvestments.com. And you can request some information for free. And when you request that information, I'd certainly appreciate it if when they ask you where you heard about it, you told them that you heard it from me, Frank Morano. 800-848-9222 if you want to comment on anything we have discussed today. Let me say hello to the Russell in White Plains. Russell, did you hear the Irishman impersonating you last night?
Yes, he impersonated the real Russell Pinzelli, and I took it as a tribute. I should get reparations or royalties.
That's right.
But it was funny because I happened to turn off. I got hung up on BAI, so I turned you on, you know, for reparations.
Well, thank you.
All of a sudden, I heard him. I mean, it was really weird. But I'm more concerned about Steve of Manhattan. Did you hear him on Greg Kelly on Thursday?
No, I was probably asleep during Greg Kelly.
Well, I mean, I thought he said he performed off-the-book surgery on the guy that held a gun on Rittenhouse and that he amputated the guy's arm even though it was only a flesh wound. I mean, I couldn't believe I was hearing him.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think a lot of people take what Steve from Manhattan says too seriously.
Well, I didn't think he was a medic, but I didn't know. But did you say Hawk was on Rita Kozibutsky yesterday? That beautiful name she has, Kozibutsky, is her real name? Or?
She played the audio of some remarks that he made. But I think that this weekend, you may actually, and maybe we'll play some clips of it Monday on the early news, this weekend and maybe today throughout some of the shows, I think our own Juliet Huddy may be interviewing Hawk Newsom. So that could be on varying shows today, actually.
I will be listening attentively. I just wanted to say real quick that, you know, him saying that there's going to be riot and bloodshed in the streets, he's not a domestic terrorist. He's making a prediction like Cassandra. And to hear Curtis complain, I mean, Hawk Newsom's a performer. He's an entertainer. He's just saying over-policing is going to face organized resistance. You know, I think that's what he's doing.
Well, I hear you. That's what he's claiming. When he was asked about it, he's saying it was predictive. It was right. Not, I'm going to be responsible for this. There is some implied level of violence there. You don't think so, Russell?
Well, I don't think he was calling for violence. I don't think it was not implied. It's going to happen. I was arrested by that street crime unit totally wrongly, and it cost me $500 to have it dismissed. So I understand, but that was years ago when I think it was Bloomberg, and it was he, stop and frisk. They were abusing everybody, all the citizens. That Hawk Newsom's a very mild guy. He's pretty cool, you know. And it doesn't take a lot of money to lease or escalate, Frank.
How much does it take?
I'd say less than $500 a month, but
that's a nice chunk. I mean, that's a nice fee. Yeah, it's more than I can afford. 800-848-9222. Terry is in Rockland County. Hello, Terry.
Hi, Frank. You interviewed Dennis Quaid, and I really enjoyed that interview. And I have some questions about him.
Okay, well, I'll do my best to answer them.
Okay, good. Thank you. Did you see him in the movie I Can Only Imagine?
I Can Only Imagine. I don't think so. No, I didn't see it, actually. It was on my list, but I didn't see it.
Okay. It's about the life of Bart Millard. He's the wonderful lead singer of the terrific group Mercy Me.
Right.
And you had a caller before that talked about crying in movies. I cried more in that movie, I think, than any movie before.
Really? I'm going to check it out. I'm a big Dennis Quaid fan.
Okay, well, the reason I cried a lot because of sadness, and then towards the end, I cried a lot because of joy. But I'd like to ask you something else about Dennis Quaid.
Sure.
He had a musical performance in New York, and you were talking about going to it. I wonder if you went to it.
I didn't go. Actually, it was on November 1st, and I had wanted to go. It was Monday, November 1st, and Rachel, she's at a point where she now has weekly doctor's appointments, so I went with Rachel to the doctor instead. Had the baby been here already, or had I or not had the appointment that day, I would have gone to see Dennis Quaid. But we had an evening appointment, too. It was not easy, even if like we had an afternoon doctor's appointment, and then I could have gone to the thing. But I heard it was great. I heard nothing but great things about it. And I've told him and his people the next time he's here in New York, I'd definitely like to come see him.
Okay, great. And if you do, please tell us about it, okay?
I sure will. Thanks, Terry. Yeah, and I got to tell you, Dennis Quaid was such a nice guy. I never met Dennis Quaid before. I still have not met him. But when I interviewed him, he said, you know, why don't you come, or this is off air. He said, well, why don't you come say hello, come backstage afterward and say hello. So next time he's in New York performing, I'm definitely going to do just that. But I remain a big fan of his as an actor. And like I said, you know, he's one of those politically independent celebrities that I'd love to see run for office sometime. I think he's certainly an interesting guy. Hey, speaking, I will tell you this, though. I would have gone to see Dennis Quaid, but the list of live performances that I am eager to go to is not very many. There's really almost nothing. I don't know what it is. Maybe it's getting old. Maybe it's the fact that you can, that everything is such a hassle. That you have to park and wear masks and this and that. Maybe, I don't know what it is, but for whatever reason, even live sporting events, which I was always really into, even pro wrestling matches, which I've loved my entire life, even boxing matches, I am not into going to anything anymore. Anything live, I almost would rather not do it. The exception is if it's something that I can only see in a live performance venue. Now, if you can hear a musician, for instance, whoever, Fits in the Tantrums. That's a band I really like, Fits in the Tantrums. If you can hear a band like Fits in the Tantrums, in live, I would just as soon hear the recorded version. You know, you listen to it at whatever volume you want. You do it from wherever you want to listen to it. But here's an exception. I did that interview a week or two ago with Hank Morris, who wrote and produced this Andrew Cuomo musical, Turtle on a Fence Post. And tomorrow, because you can't see that anywhere else except on Broadway. So tomorrow, I am really, he got me so excited about this show. I am looking forward to seeing Turtle on a Fence Post. So I'm going to see that tomorrow night, and I will give you my thorough review on Monday. Good, bad, or, you know, something in between. I will tell you my take on Turtle on a Fence Post. I did get in a little ping pong practice yesterday. My friend Joe Borelli, who, if all goes according to plan, will soon be the minority leader of the New York City Council. He stopped by the house yesterday. He called me while I was asleep yesterday. And, you know, then he texted. He said, are you home? Of course, I was home. I was asleep. So I answered him when I got up, and I said, oh, I'm sorry, I was asleep. So then he texts me around 6:45, and he says, how about now? Are you home now? I said, yeah, but, you know, I'm preparing for the show, and this is usually when I like to try and spend time with Rachel. He said, oh, come on, we'll play one quick game. So he came over. We ended up playing two quick games, and he beat me both games. But they're both very close. He's a good player. He really is. You know what it is? He has a table in his work. And Joe said to me when he came, he said, I could tell you've been practicing. Well, the truth is, I haven't been practicing that much. I played against Brian Goldstein last Sunday, but other than that, you know, I don't have a lot of players to play with in the neighborhood. Andy B called into this show recently, who did our theme song. He said he's up for playing with me, and another fella emailed me and said he's up for playing. But see, Joe gets it. Joe doesn't linger. Joe comes over, we play ping pong, he leaves. That's it. That's it. That's all I'm looking for. But I was explaining to Joe, because Joe's a big reader, and he was asking me, you know, what are you reading now? I said, so funny, I'm actually getting ready to start a new book today. I don't know what it's going to be, because the way I do it is I have a list. I call it the fishbowl. I have a collection of 13 books, which might be the next book that I read. And they come in all different categories. It's all different categories that I'm interested in, history or politics, or, you know, celebrity memoir, or whatever, pro wrestling. And, you know, it's all 13 or 14 different categories. And then I will randomly select a number and draw it blindfold out of a hat, basically. And then I'll pick that out of fishbowl, and that's the book that I read. But I was saying to Joe you know, I got to be careful. I'm not sure how much of this new book that I'm going to read, because my wife has me reading this baby book. And Rachel was not one of these women that insisted that I read every baby book known to man, because she recognizes that a lot of the stuff that's in these baby books is totally unuseful, outdated, or based on faulty information. But there's this series of books by this one economist that she likes, Emily Oster, and she read her first book, and the second book's all about what to do once you bring the baby home. So she said, you know, I'm really getting a lot out of this book. You should read this book. So I've read a few chapters, I think four or five chapters in that book. So I'm working my way through that. So I said to Joe, you know, I'm not sure if I'm going to start this book today or tomorrow or whenever, because Rachel really wants me to read this baby book. Joe, without missing a beat, this is what is so great about Joe. Joe says, does it hurt being whipped like that? Whatever. I mean, it would not be my first thought of things to do, but Rachel asks so little of me that if she wants me to read this one book, then I'll read the one book. Now, you want to email me, you can do so, frank.morano@wabcradio.com. We had pizza here today. It is Friday, so we had pizza. You know, I didn't realize that I must have inadvertently ordered two pizzas, which I would not have done. And I was wondering why the bill was so much today, but sure enough, two pizzas came here. We had a margarita, which was half sausage, and then a plain. Matt, what was you're always so enthusiastic. I think maybe you're a bad critic, but what was your review of today's pizza?
You're not going to believe this, but I haven't had it yet.
Oh, you didn't have it yet. Okay.
I didn't have
so
it
So you
yet.
Missed the margarita, so now the only thing that's left is the plain.
Yeah, which is totally fine, because I love plain pizza.
Matt, number two, what's your story? What did you think of the pizza selection today?
Always plain.
Always
I'm plain. Always a plain guy.
So did you try today's?
Yes, very good. Very
not as good,
good
as plain. Your Grimaldi's that you're accustomed
well,
to.
Well, of course not. Of course not.
Molly, would you try it? What was your review? Thumbs up from Molly. Okay, there you go. All right, we'll do 15 seconds of fame coming up in just a few minutes, and we'll you know, take your calls on anything that's interesting to you. 1-800-848-9222 if you want to queue up. and get in line for 15 seconds of fame. Could be heard on virtually any subject for 15 seconds. 800-848-WABC. This is the WABC's The Other Side of Midnight, straight ahead.
You're hearing things on 77 WABC.
The great Andy B. Hopefully he's not as good of a ping pong player as Joe Borelli, because I will soon be inviting Andy over to play ping pong. And you, potentially, if you were again, I'm not looking to entertain anyone. I'm looking to stay there in my bathrobe, play ping pong, and have you leave. No refreshments, no conversation, no inside stories about the radio. It's not a radio fantasy camp. It's just I need ping pong sparring partners so that when I face off against Joe Borelli in one of our weekend gladiator matchups, then I'm practiced enough to give him a run for his money. 800-848-WABC. We're going to do 15 seconds of fame in just a second. Now, this only works if people keep calling. And I have a good prediction of who's going to call. Of course, we have the guy that says, go Buchanan, go, go Buchanan, go. We have the guy that says, we want the Floridoris. We have the guy that says, Sid's a moron. We have the guy that says, no, Jeanine Pirro is a criminal and a fraud and TwistedJustice@CNN.com. We have Ralph, who's going to say something unintelligible that I can't understand. We're going to have Gary complain for being banned on the radio. But we'd love to get something original, a question, a thought, a joke even, whatever the case may be. If you can say it in 15 seconds, now is your time, because it's time for
The Other Side of Midnight. This is 15 Seconds of Fame.
800-848-9222. Let's say hello to Gracie. Good night, Gracie.
Hi, good morning. Listen, your friend Joe Borelli's a ping pong guy. How many times has he been married, if he's ever been married?
One.
Because he's a jerk for saying that you're being whipped by your wife suggesting to read a book. Believe me, sweetheart, that's nothing.
Thank you, Grace. Sharon, hello.
Hello. Curtis should take over the weekend edition of The Other Side of Midnight. Russo just spreads hate, conspiracy theories, and disinformation.
Pete on Staten Island.
Oh, you had Grimaldi's pizza, and I could taste it in my mouth. You got to get the Petey pie that Anthony made for me. That's the eggplant and all good stuff on it.
We didn't have Grimaldi's. We got it from another place. They didn't give us a break, so I'm not going to give them a plug. Larry in Brooklyn, hello.
Hello. Just curious, Frank, will your child be reading any books by Dr. Seuss?
That's right. I was gifted several politically incorrect Dr. Seuss books by Juliette Huddy, and we're already making this child as politically incorrect as possible. Rich in Stamford, hello.
Cousin Goofy!
See, I'll tell you what I like about that call. It's original. It's original. We haven't heard that before. I like it. William in Westchester.
Frank, congratulations on your great ratings victory over Dr. Lederman and the old codgers who claim they've been abducted by aliens in outer space.
Victor in Manhattan.
Yes, Frank, everybody's on the go today with food and takeouts. We have a new takeout, a fast food restaurant, Japanese fast food restaurant on my block. You only have to take off one shoe.
Not bad. Tyrone in the Boogie Down.
Yeah, whether it's a penis or a syringe, J.
can't force your will on man or woman. It's illegal. It's rape.
Ralph in New Jersey.
Well, you want a question? I'll ask a question. Okay? Did you place a bet on this election? Did you lose or win?
I didn't. I didn't place a bet in this election because I don't want my luck to screw up with the luck of the candidates that I'm supporting. Chris in Bethpage. Hello.
Frank, very unfair that you let that guy slide with the Gandolfini thing. How you can mispronounce Gandolfini and let him through. I thought that was unfair. I think you got to tighten it up a little bit to win $1,000.
Maybe you're right. Mike in New Hyde Park.
Quick joke, Frank. Why did the cowboy buy a wiener dog?
I give up.
He wanted to get a long little doggy.
Jeez. 800-848-9222. Mike on Staten Island.
Okay, good morning, Frank. It's Verrazano Bridge, not Verrazano. Just like it's the Outer Bridge Crossing, not the Outer Bridge. When in Woodside, eat at Dino and Sons.
Leo in Manhattan.
Frank, you should give the girl from yesterday, Myra, another chance because really every single set of the questions have just baseball or American football. It's discrimination of the girls.
Fred in Yonkers.
Frank, it was a great spot with Jeffrey Dario the other day. You guys have great chemistry, like Abbott and Costello. If you take it on the road, I know who's playing Costello. Little Joe, clubhouse, boxcars.
Thank you, Fred. 800-848-9222. That's 1-800-848-WABC. We are... We'll squeeze in one more here before we run out of time. Actually, no. Why don't we slam the lid on that portion of the program for today? You know, it's funny. The story of Grimaldi's is an interesting one. So Grimaldi's was started by Patsy Grimaldi. And, you know, he had this very successful pizza business for a long time. And then he decides, you know, maybe I don't want to do that anymore. Right. And he decides to sell Grimaldi's and he sells it to a big corporation and they license it as a franchise. And then the guys that bought Grimaldi's, they took over. They were constantly late on the rent with their location. So eventually they're late so many times, and there was a 5-year non-compete with Patsy Grimaldi and Grimaldi's. So the 5 or 10 year. So basically Patsy Grimaldi is just sitting home, and then the landlord for the original Grimaldi's location in Brooklyn, in Dumbo, they reach out to Patsy Grimaldi and said, hey, these guys at Grimaldi's, they're not paying their rent regularly, not doing the right thing. Why don't you come back and open a pizzeria? So he does, and he opens up a pizzeria in his original location. This time it's called Giuliana's, named for his mother. Grimaldi's also opens a pizzeria in Dumbo up the block. So now you have in Dumbo Grimaldi's, and then you have Giuliana's that's run by Patsy Grimaldi. And even L&B Spumoni Gardens has a pizza shop over there now. So Dumbo is quickly becoming the pizza capital of New York City. We're going to do a whole pizza show on an upcoming show. We'll got to see when National Pizza Day is. Maybe that's when we'll do it. All right. Hey, stay tuned for the WABC early news. It is an action-packed hour of news, traffic, weather, sports, you name it. Everything except commentary. And you're going to want to know what stories you're going to be hearing about all weekend long. Stay tuned. The WABC Early News is next.